Good morning and afternoon.
Good morning. Dr. Bevan, we're waiting for Dr. Leck.
Okay.
His
Did you do you want me to note during the conflict of interest portion the work that Mr. Garner does for
You
us,
know,
or
Dr. Mevin, that's up to you if you choose. I spoke with Attorney General, Assistant Attorney General James Monahan this morning, and he said that's entirely up to you, but he didn't see that there was a conflict of interest there.
okay. I'll just mention it during the that portion of the agenda and not as a conflict of interest. And do we want to, are we waiting for Dr. Leck past the 10 o'clock start time or?
Let's give her one more minute. I just sent her another login.
Anyone want to meet my 92-year-old mother, whose house I'm at?
Yes.
Come on over. Come on, Mom.
She wants to get the letter that she got from Gina.
Well, tell her we said hello.
Dr. Mittman, is it her birthday?
No, it's not, but we're visiting her in New York City.
Yeah.
That's not my mother. That was my wife.
Tremendous. Enjoy the city. This time of the year is pretty beautiful, although maybe a little warm.
I know, coming from someone in Arizona, that says a lot.
Yeah.
Still nice. Hopefully you get out to Central Park, all your favorite eating places and that kind of stuff.
I will tomorrow, as it turns out. This is not part of the official record, right, Mr. Lamel?
It can be.
It will be removed from the official record, correct.
Okay.
Dr. Mittman, if you're ready, we do have a quorum. And we can get started, and I assume that Dr. Leck will be joining us shortly.
Okay. So why don't we start the recording? It is 10:02 Arizona time, and the Board for Private Postsecondary Education board meeting commences. So, pursuant to ARS 38-431.02, notice is hereby given to the general public and to members of the Arizona State Board for Private Postsecondary Education that the board will hold a board meeting open to the public on the date and time indicated above. The meeting will be held digitally online. A full meeting agenda and list of applications to be considered can be found online at www.ppsc.az.gov. The board reserves the right to change the order of items on the agenda, except for those matters set for a specific time. The formal hearings and formal interviews are scheduled to be heard during the specific time blocks. The board chairperson, however, reserves the right to call cases in random order. The board, upon a majority of a quorum of the members, may hold an executive session on any of the listed agenda items to obtain legal advice per ARS 38-431.03A3. The board, upon a majority vote of a quorum of the members, may also hold an executive session pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2 on any agenda item listed for the purpose of discussion or consideration of records exempt by law from public inspection, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is specifically required to be maintained as confidential by state or federal law. Americans with Disabilities Act. Persons with a disability may request a reasonable accommodation, such as sign language interpreter or a copy of this document in an alternative format, by contacting the executive director, Kevin LaMountain, at 602-542-5716. And with that, this meeting is called to order, and Mr. LaMountain, can we take the roll call?
Dr. Mittman?
Present.
Dr. Mittman is present. Dr. Leck? Dr. Mittman is present.
Leck?
Dr. Leck is present. Mr. Romano?
Present.
Mr. Romano is present. Mr. Ball?
Present.
Mr. Ball is present. Mr. Wallace?
Present.
Mr. Wallace is present. And Ms. Cardullo?
Present.
Ms. Cardullo is present. Staff, Mr. Keith Blanchard?
Present.
Ms. Jacqueline Rome?
Present.
Mr. Seamus Monahan?
Present.
And I'm present, Kevin Mountain, Executive Director. So all present count.
Are there any declarations of conflict of interest? Hearing none, we'll move on. And can we get a review, discussion, and possible action on approval of board meeting minutes? And this is in reference to the acceptance of the audio recordings as the official open minutes of the board meeting from May 26, 2022. I'll make a motion to accept the minutes. And can we get a second, please?
Mike Romano, second.
Very good. And we'll take the vote. Mr. LaMountain.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye, Dr.
I abstain. I wasn't there.
Okay. Dr. Leck abstains. Dr. Leck, your audio is hard. It's hard to hear you. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 5 ayes, 1 abstention, the motion passes.
Thank you.
Dr. Mittman?
Yep.
There will be one change in the agenda today, based on a conversation that you and I had, that we'll be moving number 9, the review of and discussion on Aspen University. We'll be moving that up to the next item on the agenda prior to the review and discussion of executive director's report.
Okay, so that would make it next on the agenda.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, as previously stated, as the chairperson, I reserve the right to do that, and so I'm going to exercise that right now. So next issue on the agenda is the review, discussion, and possible action concerning the recent letter from Arizona Private Post-Secondary Education to Aspen University, including compliance with the consent agreement and update on NCLEX progress.
Dr. Mittman, would you like me to give a brief overview?
Yes, please do.
Dr. Mittman, members of the board, on a number of times over the last few months, there have been some issues with Aspen University. I've been back and forth with their compliance department. And in your board packet, you have my report that provides the overview of the challenges and the issues that we've had over the last few months with Aspen University. I thought I would just break them out quickly and then open up, obviously, the conversation and allow the institution to respond to any of the challenges and issues that we brought forward. In the letter, a number of letters that I provided to the institution, there are 7 issues that I just wanted to bring to your attention. Number one was an issue with a supplemental license, with an issue that the institution had two programs that were not part of the pre-licensure program, but there are other programs that they do offer. That in the case, they had not completed their application to the state of Arizona for those particular programs, and that would be the Master of Public Health. And there were students that were actually enrolled in those programs. And that would potentially be a violation of the statutes. The second is SARA enrollment agreements that we did notice during an investigation that there were four students that were enrolled in the institution outside of their SARA approval from the state of Colorado. That information and those student information is in your board report as well. Number three, an Arizona SARA application, there was a failure to disclose information regarding the stipulated agreement that they have with our state board. And in the SARA application, it was they did not make that particular statement in their application to AZ SARA. There was an issue with a renewal application that this board voted on a few months ago for their license renewal package, which a element of that license asked the question specifically related to legal action that the entity may have. The institution did not disclose the current class action lawsuit that is ongoing. So that was not provided on the application. There is a concern, and certainly there's going to be some back and forth conversations that we have as it relates to enrolling students under the agreement, the Arizona agreement for the BSN and pre-licensure program. I've provided quite a bit of information, and I know you have the institution's response on that as it relates to how the programs in four additional states, those that being Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, and Texas, how the institution sees the enrollment in those programs as it relates to the program that we have that we license here in Arizona, and how their license is tied directly to the Arizona Board of Nursing program for that pre-licensure nursing, and the way that DAC, their accreditor, works. So I provided that information, both the institutional response and the response from DAC. So there's quite a bit of information in there as well. The next is an issue as it relates to the current NCLEX. I provided you a chart from the Arizona Board of Nursing from Dr. Robbie. I did receive an updated communication, an updated report as of this morning. That number has changed from your board report to an updated number of the first time pass rates year to date as of this morning. Is 66.24%. And based upon the calculation from Dr. Robbie and the Board of Nursing, it would require at this point moving forward for the rest of the year a 95% pass rate in order for Aspen University to obtain the 80% or above as a way to not trigger the stay of revocation from the Arizona Board of Nursing. So it's actually gone down from the last report, which was 67.81. Again, now it's 66.24. And I believe that as we are right now, that is the most recent update. You have the information. The institution has responded with a few letters that are also attached to your board report. And I believe we have Dr. St. Arnold, who is on along with other members of Aspen University, to answer any questions you may have.
Great. Thank you, Mr. LaMountain. Welcome, Dr. St. Arnold. It's nice to see you again. Could all of the folks from Aspen, or maybe Dr. St. Arnold, could you introduce your colleagues from Aspen University?
Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. Yes, I'm Dr. Sherry St. Arnold, and I'm the president of Aspen University. I'm joined here today with Kate Lee Carey and David Gardner, two experienced education lawyers, to answer any questions and hopefully clarify any misunderstandings.
Great. Thank you. And I'll just make a statement that my institution has worked with Mr. Gardner as well. I don't believe we've checked this as not a conflict of interest, but I do want to declare that. Dr. St. Arnold, do you want to make an opening statement?
I do. Thank you very much. I recognize that we have much to cover and appreciate your patience as I walk through this prepared statement. I want to emphasize from the outset that Aspen is committed to doing whatever it takes to support its students, demonstrate compliance with the many requirements that apply across the country, and advance our mission to help students graduate with little to no debt. Thousands of our students have graduated without federal financial aid over the years with our pioneering monthly payment plan. Aspen emphasizes that while we acknowledge some missteps, none of these were intentional, and we want you to know this is not indicative of our culture. The challenges we've been experiencing are temporary, and whether or not Aspen returns to participating in SARA, a point we should have clarity on in a few weeks, we will continue to operate and pursue the necessary approvals in other states. Currently, 80% of our student population is covered by full approvals in 32 states, and we have another 9 where we have partial approvals for currently enrolled students while applications are being reviewed. We are committed to compliance, performance, and doing whatever is necessary to confirm that Aspen possesses the necessary resources, policies, and processes to support our students. In this opening statement, I'm going to address the agenda items a bit out of order because I'd like to discuss the issue regarding the pre-licensure nursing program and the stipulated agreement with input from Kate at the end of my prepared remarks. It certainly has been a challenging and interesting year, and a lot has happened following what was supposed to be a straightforward move to Arizona. Although this process has been exceedingly challenging, it was pursued with the best of intentions to secure the exceptional talent available here to manage an online university. Based on our interactions with states and accreditors, it certainly hasn't been clear and definitely not an easy path to relocate to a different state. Moving a primarily online institution requires many regulatory challenges, especially when SARA approval has been embedded in institutional operations and disappears during the relocation. Further complicating matters is the fact that Aspen is accredited by the Distance Education Accrediting Commission, or DEAC, and as a result doesn't have the option of adding additional locations, branch campuses, or satellites to further clarify the identity of campus locations to other regulators, which may conflict depending on the perspective of the oversight agency. The letter on the agenda today and Mr. LaMountain's recent email relate to some of these transition challenges, but let me be very clear, we have never, not even for a moment, deviated from our commitment to our students and prior agreements and our good faith efforts to comply with all the rules we are subject to on a daily basis. The correspondence highlighted some timing and processing issues that were largely the result of numerous applications, notices, and logistical challenges occurring simultaneously due to our relocation, coupled with a sudden increase in applications for additional state approvals due to the loss of SARA in Colorado. We've worked hard to address these issues and are happy to say that at present, we have approval, exemptions, or not required to secure approval in 32 states for new and continuing students and in 9 states for our currently enrolled students to continue. In order to ensure we're meeting all of our commitments and continuing to approve, we've done 2 things. First, we've retained David Garner from the firm of Osborne Meldon to enhance our compliance efforts. And second, we are actively searching for a dedicated senior compliance person to ensure we meet the standing compliance requirements. Our commitment to improvement and compliance also includes an acknowledgement that we've made several errors, as pointed out in the letter. We own these mistakes, and I would certainly like to address them briefly. First, 8 students were originally enrolled in the Master of Public Health program, 6 of whom remain. They were inadvertently enrolled prior to the approval of this board. When the error was revealed, we immediately halted those 6 students from progressing. None are in class. Second, 4 students were enrolled after the May 17 cutoff date from Colorado. All 4 were already in the application enrollment pipeline prior to May 17, so they were not blocked in the system tool as they were not considered new prospective students at the time. They were inadvertently moved from applicant to enrollment in the days following the cutoff. Three of the four students signed their enrollment agreement within 24 hours of Aspen receiving the notice from Colorado SARA on the 17th. This was not an intentional act to enroll more students. And finally, the two failures to disclose information on applications were simply misses, and we apologize for them. At this time, I'd like to provide an update on our nursing program. As the board knows, we entered into a consent agreement with the Arizona Board of Nursing at the end of March 2022, which was only one quarter ago. We are complying with that consent agreement. One of its most important items is that we retain an Arizona Board of Nursing approved consultant to review and help us improve our program. She spent a week on our campus, met with our students and our faculty, reviewed our processes, our curriculum. She looked at all of our end of course survey results, including hundreds of student comments from the past 2 years. She's participated in our faculty trainings required by the consent agreement and worked with the faculty on curricular revisions that are ongoing as a result of her recommendations. Her report is due to Aspen and the Board of Nursing at the end of August. We're looking forward to seeing it and will diligently pursue her recommendations. Despite the efforts we've made in the last quarter, we've not yet seen a sufficient improvement in our NCLEX first-time pass rates. It was 71.55 as of June 30th. Mr. LaMountain gave you an update. It's been one quarter. We are continuing to look for ways to improve our programs and support our students and look forward to receiving input from our consultant. We found that students who take advantage of the support we offer, such as the Kaplan Review course, have success on the NCLEX exam. As of last week, we have 153 students left to test this year. 103 will be new graduates and 50 are left to test from previous cohorts. We choose not to conjecture about our final 2022 annual first-time pass rate at this time, but we can indicate that we've graduated 243 nurses who are now working in Arizona and are doing everything we can to greatly increase that number to address the nursing shortage in Arizona. Regarding state authorization in external states and the email relating to the obligation to report updates to this board, Aspen did not fail to fulfill that obligation. On Tuesday, we received an email expressing concern about Aspen's attempts to comply with various states' authorization requirements in light of its lack of Colorado SARA status. In that email, the board indicated that it believed pausing matriculation for students in states outside Arizona is in violation of R-439-406, but that's not accurate. Aspen has not ceased to operate or discontinued any programs in any other states, and instead it suspended admissions and the start of the next term for students in certain states that required either SARA authorization or state approval to deliver education. Individual state applications and the Arizona SARA application remain pending or in process. To the Arizona SARA Council, we are appearing before on September 8th. We've submitted extensive information, including our composite score, which is 2.9. We produced a $500,000 bond and we paid an application fee of $2,500. We look forward to a positive outcome at that meeting. As a reminder, despite no longer having approval status in Colorado, Aspen can still enroll students in fully online programs in numerous jurisdictions without SARA under individual state approvals or exemptions. Again, currently 80% of our students are covered by these state authorizations. And if Aspen is denied any state approvals, which we don't expect, we will alert the board and our accreditor and initiate an appropriate teach-out process for students at that time. Second, DEAC has not taken any action previously reported, and the obligation in the stipulated agreement is clear that Aspen did not fail to satisfy a reporting obligation. The stipulated agreement states that Aspen shall report monthly to board staff and or during board meetings regarding NCLEX rates, financial status of Aspen University and Aspen Group, any accreditor, or United States Department of Education actions. The DEAC Commission took a formal action as noticed by letter copied to Mr. Lamontin, dated on July 25th, and that correspondence was provided to the board timely. The August 16th letter from DEAC to Aspen was not an accreditor action. Therefore, we did not believe it was necessary to report it. Regarding the board's August 12th letter and the agenda item regarding the stipulated agreement, Aspen does not believe that any of the actions it's taken violate the agreement. As you are all aware, there were five stipulated terms pursuant in the agreement between Aspen and the board. Aspen has taken prompt action to comply with all of the terms, but the board has recently expressed concerns over Aspen's compliance with the third term. For reference, that states, term three, immediate suspension of admissions activity that is consistent with the actions Aspen University has taken, ceasing enrollment for pre-nursing and core nursing courses in the BSN pre-licensure program until Aspen University has successfully resolved its matter before the Arizona Board of Nursing, as determined by the Arizona Board of Private Postsecondary Education. Aspen ceased enrolling any new Arizona students into the pre-professional and core nursing courses that comprise the Arizona Board of Nursing approved pre-licensure BSN program in January of 2022. There has been substantial back and forth about this specific provision as it relates to enrollments into Aspen's BSN pre-licensure nursing programs approved outside of Arizona. And it seems that we have reached some sort of a crossroads on this item, and I've asked Kate to provide some additional feedback on that specifically. Kate?
Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me okay? Mm-hmm. So thank you very much for the opportunity to chime in as Sherry has provided her feedback. As Sherry mentioned, I am an education regulatory attorney. I work with Pooley LLP, and I've been practicing higher education law for over 20 years. And I have to say this current situation with Aspen has been both unique and challenging. But having worked with them on this over the past few months, I can say that I feel they're working very diligently to try to correct the errors that Sherry noted and that have been provided to the board in their packet, and have been doing everything they can to ensure they're complying with the consent agreement with the Board of Nursing and the stipulated agreement with this board. I wanted to just discuss the nursing program stipulation in a little more detail with this context and sort of larger regulatory structure. So I will start by saying that we believe that the enrollment of students into pre-licensure nursing programs that are approved in states outside of Arizona does not violate the stipulations of either agreement. As written, the stipulated agreement with the board, this board, governs only Arizona students enrolled in the Arizona Board of Nursing approved nursing program and not students enrolled in pre-licensure nursing programs authorized to operate in other states. In fact, the stipulated agreement asks for records on a monthly basis, but only for students in Arizona, which seems to be a clear indication of that intent. While Aspen has provided the board additional student records, not just Arizona students, in an effort to be more transparent, if students are located outside of Arizona, Aspen is not obligated to provide those records, and they're not subject to the record request. As someone who's assisted states with their state authorization processes for many, many years, as you can imagine, I have many clients who operate primarily online programs, some accredited, some non-accredited, some with access to SARA, some without. Of course, if they're in California where I am, they don't have SARA. So I have been through this process with many schools who have to be approved in all states in some cases. In some states, just enrolling a single student is a sufficient trigger to require authorization. In others, it's only applicable if the institution creates a physical presence, which naturally, as you can imagine, is defined differently in every single state. So under these circumstances, where there is a physical presence or a single student creates an authorization requirement, the state mandates the institution go through the entire process of becoming an approved institution in that state. That may mean degree granting authority, that may, depending on the type of program, but it will require the state authorization of that program. Aspen has obtained degree granting authorization in Texas, Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee, and in each state, the pre-licensure bachelor in nursing program has been separately approved by that state's Board of Nursing. Each of the states operates the pre-licensure BSN program includes an in-state learning site, which DEAC refers to as an in-residence program, quotes, and is therefore physically present in those states for the purpose of state authorization and required state approval from those relevant boards of nursing, all of which occurred prior to Aspen's move to Arizona, and none were dependent on Sarah because they all had a physical presence that required authorization. As Sherry mentioned earlier, DEAC does not have approval options for additional locations or branches or satellites as other agencies do. The only option they have is what they call the in-residence program. So in situations where in-person training is required, this is the way that DEAC will approve it, is its in-residence program. And that is a site approval, which can only be issued if the state has already approved the institution and, in this case, also the program for purposes of nursing licensure. Each, as you all, as I know, I'm preaching to the choir. Each of you know there's each state has its own system, their own requirements, and in all cases, an approved institution must comply with all of the requirements of that authorizing agency, and in this case, also the boards of nursing. And that includes things like grievance procedures and record keeping and disclosures and all of the things that come along with authorization in those states. Some have local bond requirements. Of the four states where Aspen is licensed outside Arizona, three of them have bonding requirements, staff registration, faculty requirements, and student tuition recovery funds. Aspen has made every effort to ensure full compliance in each of these states, including links to those authorizing agencies for student complaints. In Texas, Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee, Aspen has an approved location with staff and faculty committed to those students in that state attending that approved site. It has clinical affiliates in each of those states that are exclusive to that state. The BSN pre-licensure program has been tailored to meet the requirements of each state's Board of Nursing in order to make sure those students are eligible for licensure in that state. Graduating Bachelor of Nursing students are eligible to apply for RN licensure in their home state based on the approvals from those state boards of nursing, and the NCLEX results are attributed to the program within that state. The NCLEX passage rates of students participating in the in-resident state programs only measure applicants in that state and are not included in the Arizona NCLEX measurement. Students attending in-residence in Texas, Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee are not Arizona residents, nor are they attending the nursing core courses approved by the Arizona Board of Nursing. They attend the program specific to and authorized in their home state, and the Arizona Board of Nursing cannot approve a program in those states. None of the states defer to the state of Arizona for program approval, and each takes a very active role in overseeing Aspen's conduct and the content provided to local students. The disclosure requirements, curriculum modifications, outcome tracking, complaint, bond options, requirements, many other elements are all focused on students in those states. We believe all these distinctions confirm Aspen's position that enrolling non-Arizona residents into these externally approved by the state authorizing agency and the boards of nursing in those states does not violate the stipulated agreement with the board or the consent agreement with the Arizona Board of Nursing, primarily because this board's stipulated agreement is built on the Arizona Board of Nursing agreement, which only has the authority to govern the nursing program in Arizona. We understand part of the concern from the board relates to some of Aspen's documents, its enrollment agreement, and some of the other documents that did not do a great job of reflecting this distinction, and those are things that I am already working with them to correct, and going forward we feel like that is a way to ensure that students understand if they are enrolled in one of these Board of Nursing approved programs in one of these other four states that they are subject to the jurisdiction of those states just as any other online student would be if they're enrolled in an approved program in that state. And so with that, I will hand it back to Sherry.
Thank you, Kate. In closing, I just want to once again reiterate the seriousness with which we take our obligations under the stipulated agreement and that we are diligently working through the various challenges that have arisen as part of our relocation. We are making every effort to increase our focus on full compliance, not only with the board, but with all of our regulatory oversight agencies. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. St. Arnold. Thank you, Ms. Carey, as well. Let's just see. So there were a number of points that you made in your remarks, Dr. St. Arnold. I think the point that bringing Ms. Carey in focuses on the out-of-state registrations where there is licensure. It does appear that this is also an issue with the accrediting body, who I think in their letter dated earlier this month, that their current determination, I'll just read from it, is that each of the in-resident clinical sites is part of the same BSN program based in Arizona, and subject as reflected above to the same reporting obligations, which is sort of reinforced by the enrollment agreement, which also again references Aspen University in Arizona. I assume that this is an issue that you will also be taking up with DEAC. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And the, you know, I think one of the other concerns raised by the accrediting body was the timing and notification to students who are currently enrolled about the cessation of Aspen's ability to continue those programs in some states. Can you respond to that concern?
Yes, thank you for the opportunity. You know, the regulatory tangle that we find ourselves in is layered upon agencies and timelines, and it's clearly impacted our processes and timely responses for all the requests of information coming to our regulators. We did notice 766 students between the August 16th and the August 30th start date for the registrations that were going on hold, and we have already re-enrolled and re-noticed 301 of those students that they are now eligible to continue. Our state authorizations are coming in monthly, or daily, I should say. We just got another one this morning. And so, yes, the regulatory triangle, you know, it was a late notice to students, but it was more important that we complied with the Arizona SARA or the Colorado SARA stipulations.
Okay. And just to clarify the timeline, did you become aware that this was going to be an issue?
We did know it was going to be, you know, an issue towards the end of the month of August, and we had worked with our IR department to pull the appropriate numbers. And then, you know, by the time we got those appropriate numbers, it was definitely last minute. We have had all of our staff, our advisors, our faculty, our PDs, all working with students on the particular, you know, waiting for their state authorizations. I know Mr. Lamountain has said he's received some complaints. We have had very minimal. Most of our students do understand. And as I said, we've already enrolled 301 of them back into the program.
Right. I guess my question was, when did Aspen University first recognize that this was going to be an issue that would come to pass at the end of August?
I think initially the letter stated that students would be covered by September 6th. And it was only when we were looking through the data on the students who were registered to start on August 16th that we realized that those students and continuing in their education would fall outside of those guidelines. And at that point, we realized that we needed to, for those two start dates, we needed to pause their enrollment. We didn't feel it was going to be more than one course start, just simply because our cooperation with all of our state authorizations, you know, has been significant, and we get reauthorization daily.
Okay. Questions from other board members?
Dr. Mendham, would it be valuable, Mr. Lamont, I don't know if you had any additional clarity you'd like to provide. I know that was a very lengthy response from the school, and I didn't know if you wanted to denote anything that was brought forward that might be relevant to the board's understanding.
Certainly. Dr. Mittman and members of the board, thank you. Just a few points of clarification, and perhaps the institution can respond to this. Your license, the pre-licensure nursing program, is tied to your license in Arizona. That is based upon your approval in that particular program is based upon the approval that the Arizona Board of Nursing has for your pre-licensure program, which is currently not progressing in a direction that is positive. If the Board of Nursing removes the stay and requires a teach out of that program, which may or may not happen, it's a different board, they have a different set of things that they want to follow on their own. But if that were to happen, our board would require the teach out of the students. And then we would remove, once those students are taught out, we would remove the pre-licensure program from your license in the state of Arizona. The question goes back to the way DEAC accredits your institution, and you've seen some of the responses back and forth from DEAC to the institute, to you and to us, that if the Arizona Board of Nursing removes the stay and requires the teach out, we would do the same. Then we would remove the pre-licensure program from your license, thereby not having that program licensed in any state, because the way DEAC runs it, and there's a clarifying statement that Dr. Matthews from DEAC stated, which is in her last statement to me, was, with respect to the specific question set forth in the August 17th email, the answer is as follows. DEAC's accreditation of Aspen University's BSN pre-licensure program is not dependent on the program approval by the Arizona Board of Nursing. It is, however, dependent upon the authorization of the program by the Arizona State Board for Private Postsecondary Education. Accordingly, if that authorization to offer the program is withdrawn, DEAC's approval of the program would likewise be withdrawn. Meaning, if we take the pre-licensure off of our license, off of your license in the state of Arizona, you would no longer have that as an opportunity, thereby impacting and affecting those four other states. Because of the way DEAC is structured, you would not be able to operate those programs in those four additional states unless you have an independent set of licensure that is also accredited by DEAC, which we know is not the case, because that's not how DEAC works. So I would just, perhaps if you could respond to that to the board so they can understand, which is why we tie the Arizona enrollment agreement with the Arizona license, with the Arizona program, and the approval by the Arizona Board of Nursing, and how that's tied to those four additional states that you operate the program in. So it'd be clarification purpose, great to hear from the institution on that.
So first, I would like to just talk about, you know, the conjecture about pulling the stay. You know, we signed that consent agreement in March. We had 1 year of low scores, and it was a COVID year. Within one quarter, we were signing the stipulated agreement. We've had one additional quarter to make improvements. We have all of the Board of Nursing, all of the consultants' information coming in, and I am hoping that we are not jumping to conjecture of pulling a stay before we even have presented the first of the consent agreement information back to the Board of Nursing. That said, I do hear what you're saying. Kate, is there anything that you would like to add in regards to his question on the pre-licensure program being pulled off of our license?
Yes, thank you, Sherry. So I think we do understand that issue. We understand that there, that issue, because of the act structure, that is an issue that is there, and we're working to avoid that happening, right? But at the same time, I think you have to make a distinction between that as a, you know, what the outcome of that might be versus whether or not it was somehow a violation of the agreement for Aspen to have enrolled students in these four other states approved programs. And so I think I understand from Arizona's perspective that there is a sort of enmeshing of those things, but for purposes of the stipulated agreement that is built upon the Board of Nursing approved program, where we have Board of Nursing approval and authorization to issue degrees in those four other states, we do not believe that those students as enrolled at this point is this any sort of stipulation violation. That is a separate issue from, I think, what we're talking about, which is what is the potential outcome if there is a pull or whatever you would like to call it at the, you know, based on this Board of Nursing agreement. We understand that issue. And I think at this point, what the Aspen's focus is, let's get our program to a point where that is not going to happen. But if it does, then of course we will have a lot of work to do. But at this point, I think we just need to separate the conjecture of what might happen versus whether or not a stipulation has been violated, which I will strongly state I do not believe has been violated.
Mr. Romano? Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. Mr. Romano, do you want to go first and then Mr. O'Mountain?
Yeah, just briefly. Thank you, Ms. Carey. I appreciate that. And I do want to say, I think that what we're trying to kind of get our arms around, all of our hope is that it will not go that direction, right? Nobody wants that. We can see the school's intent to resolve these matters and move in a positive direction. And we're with you on that piece of it, right? So all of us are working towards the success of the institution here. And a lot of this is just discussion of trying to get clarity around how best we communicate, work together, and if certain things happen, next steps. And this seemed to be an interesting point based on the four states and the interpretation, where we're just trying to get, I think, a little clarity. And Mr. Lamont, I'm probably putting words in your mouth and you can clarify the responsibility of the state, this state, Arizona, to those students in the four other states and how that would all play out. Mr. Lamont, is that what you're trying to really get to ultimately?
Mr. Romano, members of the board, yes. It is, we do, and I understand the conjecture piece of this, but part of our board is to protect students and all students and wherever the institution may be enrolling students from, regardless if it's in the state of Arizona. So the concern that we have and what brought this to our attention is the uniqueness of Aspen's specific accreditor as it relates to how that institution is accredited, which is different if there were other accreditors that Aspen went to. This would not be an issue. It is specifically with DEAC, and the challenge is that everything and every student, regardless of where they live, is directly tied to the license in the state of Arizona. That would include those states that have physical locations outside of the state of Arizona, and That's the tying together. So ultimately, if something were to happen, and I hope it doesn't, and we are all hoping that nothing happens to the program, and that it can continue and it can thrive. But the issue is, if it does not, ultimately, those four states that they're recruiting students into would be subject to the removal of our licensure for that particular program in the state of Arizona, thereby letting all of those, or requiring all of those students to go through the same teach-out process, regardless of their NCLEX rates. because our statutes tie our board approval for their license to the Arizona Board of Approval for their license. Nothing to do with Texas, Florida, Tennessee, and others in Georgia. There is nothing tied to that. Their license is tied for this program directly to the Board of Nursing in the state of Arizona.
Ms. Carey?
I just wanted to say that I completely understand what Mr. LaMountain is saying. I think what our position is with those four states, and of course, again, I'll just keep reiterating it because I don't want to jinx us, that we fully expect that this is not going to happen. But if we got into that situation, because each of these, the residents in residence locations are approved locations in those states, they have state authorization. In three of the four, we have a bond. We have student tuition recovery fund availability for those students. So I think we understand the concept that if DEAC were to say the program is no longer available because Arizona has removed it, that the teach out process would be governed by each of those four states. Because those, as far as those states are concerned, this is an approved institution with an approved program in their state, and those students are their residents. So I agree that it will be complicated, but I think it would be treated like any other, this is a unique situation, obviously, but if an approved institution loses a program and that impacts multiple states, then each of those states have to deal with that in their own teach-out process. So each state will, but those four at least, would govern the teach-out process for each of those four boards of nursing programs. So I don't want to, conjecture is a great word. I don't want to get us to a point where we're making this happen in our brains, but I do feel like we understand the risk and we're figuring out how to avoid it. But if it does happen, then we understand that there is the risk that those four states would all require teach-ups.
Mr. Romano.
Thank you, Ms. Carey. I appreciate that. Taking that a little further, right? So when we think about the reason we asked for the stipulated agreement because of the risk associated with the NCLEX results, and that ultimately that could result in a teach out for Arizona in this particular case, that was why it made sense to hit the pause button on enrollments. From what has just been shared, ultimately if what takes place that would impact Arizona students here through that stipulated agreement would also result in a teach out at those four other states, regardless of the fact that it would be under the constraints of those states for a teach out method. I think we can all agree that would be a negative impact to students as a result. And so if logic dictates that it was right to pause for Arizona out of risk of a teach out, wouldn't that same logic apply to these four other states that dependent upon the outcome of the Arizona Board of Nursing and the NCLEX situation? Would it not also, in good faith for the students, as Aspen has stated that is their focus, not be appropriate to pause for those four other states that would be a direct ripple effect? I'm just asking the question out of ignorance, not to be, judgmental.
What I would tell you is that each of the states are aware of the situation that's going on in Arizona, and each of the states has not indicated to us that they wanted to follow that path. They are working with us diligently and the students and the program directors in those states. So, to have this stipulated agreement apply to students in other states, I think is a little premature since they are all aware of that, what's happening here today. And they're not asking for the same at this point in time.
Right. Well, I'm going to recognize Dr. Leck in a second, but I think if I'm correct, Mr. Romano, that your comments weren't directed at what was the right thing for the states to do. But in following the spirit of the stipulated agreement, I think that you were saying, wouldn't Aspen University apply the same caution to prospective students in other states.
You said it much better than I did, Dr. Mittman.
Well, whatever. Could Dr. Leck? Dr. Leck, I see you. You might be muted still.
Nope. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I was curious, the other states you hadn't had graduates yet. Do you have graduates now and any NCLEX scores there yet? No.
No. No, we don't. And we have very few students in each of those states.
When do you expect the first scores to come in for a graduating class, do you know?
In 2023 in Austin.
Okay. Other questions for Dr. St. Arnold and Ms. Carey?
I have just a couple more that I would appreciate maybe a little more color on. Obviously, you stated very well that, you know, the start of this really occurred during COVID, where a number of schools have been impacted on all types of levels in regards to student success rates, taking exams, and all of that. So I think we all empathize and sympathize from that standpoint, by all means. And it has been a short period of time that we've been in this, and I realize that we're really watching the paint dry in some respects, right? Like, you know, here it is. It's only been a quarter, and we bounce a little bit downward, and we don't want to be too rash in making any judgment or determinations on this is now a trend. That's not our intent, but we can all agree it creates a moment of pause that says, wow, we were hoping for a better outcome. The school has put a lot of focus on trying to improve these outcomes over the last several months of their operation. From your perspective, if you could provide a little more color on what you think maybe isn't working or will be working here in the near future to bring that optimism level up if possible.
Right. So thank you for that. We have done a very deep analysis of our current student population in Phoenix. We looked at their entering GPAs. We looked at their HESI A2 scores. We looked at their NCLEX pass rates. And we found an interesting relationship. Interestingly enough, GPA did not impact it at all. But what we found was if a student passed all three entrance exams the first time, their opportunity to pass NCLEX on the first time was very high. If they missed one of the exams, one or more of the exams, it dropped to about 50%. And if they missed English, as in particular, it dropped the lowest, down to 30%. We have a very diverse student body, and those students were entered into our program. We have not entered any additional ones. But based on that, we have made significant changes to our entrance requirements. And we will only accept students who have passed all three entrance exams in any of our other locations. We have, all of the tests need to be taken at Aspen. We made some errors in our entrance exams for these students. And we have instituted a Kaplan program. And what we found is that if students actually stayed with us beyond graduation, their chances of passing first time are like 98%. But we have a lot of students that graduate and they don't stay with us until the day that they test. Some take 90 days or more, and then they just want to go see and try and see how it goes. And they don't pass, but they do come back to us, and we are 100% committed to all of our students. And what I can tell you is that, though not on the first time, we have an overall pass rate over 80% for all students. And so while we are seeing within our own processes and procedures changes that are significantly impacting our other state enrollments and issues that we are having to deal with based on our own entrance requirements for these students. We are working diligently to work with these students and embedding some of the review program down into the curriculum. It is now being embedded into Adult Health 1, 2, 3, and 4 in addition to the last 16 weeks of the TPP because our analysis shows that it works. It does work. It's just that a lot of students are still graduating and checking to see and then coming back. So we do believe that some of the interventions that we're making will make a difference. We are hoping that the Board of Nursing will recognize a lot of these. We've been working closely with a consultant. She's got the deep analysis on all of our students. And I am hoping that they will be open-minded and recognize that when you have anyone who's an educator knows you don't turn the ship in 3 months. And it will take us a little bit of time. Whether the board will afford us that time or not will remain to be seen. But I'm hoping that they will at least keep an open mind and take a look at the consultant's report, though I'm not sure what it's going to say. I do believe her to be very fair. I do believe her to be to have really looked at every aspect of our program, and we've been very transparent with her. So I would also encourage, you know, this board to perhaps wait until we get this information as well.
I appreciate that, Dr. Sanano. Going one more step, and this is really my last question. I think as I review this, you know, I recognize the school has been very responsive, certainly able to acknowledge where you've had some missteps in some areas. Seems like a lot of what we're talking about too stemmed from not just the NCLEX outcomes, but the move of the institution. And, you know, I think in hindsight, probably what could have been examined at a higher level in advance to maybe reduce some of the challenges that have occurred as a result of this. It seems as though over this period, you've brought Ms. Carey on, Mr. Gardner on to help work through and identify to remain more compliant to what seems to be a very daunting list of expectations that have been put upon you from various states and what that looks like. Appropriately so, but still daunting nonetheless, right? If you could provide maybe just a little bit of color of what your intent is, and maybe not the continued retainment of Ms. Carey and Ms. Gardner, unless you want to speak to that, by all means, but more so just the ongoing embrace from the compliance side and getting ahead of this in a more proactive way than what has really felt like much more of a reactive type of approach up until this point.
100%. Some of our staff has likened it to we're in a pinball machine. And I have to, agree that it feels like that sometimes. But 100% that we are committed to being compliant. And so we are looking, actively seeking the employee of a senior compliance person who will, you know, we've got all of the matrices of all of our regulatory agencies and what they require. DEAC has required some that will begin September 15th. And in HERS, the monthly reporting is specifically addressed to go to both Arizona Private Post-Secondary as well as the Arizona Board of Nursing. So we will continue to provide everything that we have. But once we bring this senior compliance person on and build out an appropriate compliance department, I'm hoping that it will allow us to be 100% compliant with everything that's asked of us.
Thank you. I appreciate that. My last question is actually to board staff. Did we possibly inadvertently or unintentionally in the stipulation circumvent the responsibilities of reporting when a school receives notification? I believe we have some requirements within a 24-hour period or 48-hour period. But is it possible by our language we've moved away from that to the monthly notification? If a school receives some type of notification, I'm asking that again out of ignorance, possibly just working through the issue.
Kevin, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. I can handle that question for you. So no, the stipulated agreement still requires, just as the license requires, that everybody complies with statute and rule. There's never a provision in a consent agreement that it's going to negate a statute or rule. So thank you.
Thank you, Assistant Attorney General. Appreciate that. That concludes my question, Dr. Minton.
Thank you, Mr. Romano. Assistant Attorney General Monahan, so could you just elaborate a little bit? Is that in reference to the statement made by the representatives at Aspen about why the notifications from DEAC were not reported to this board and only the official actions?
Well, if you'd like to discuss the consent agreement, Dr. Mittman, I'd be happy to go into executive session so we could review that.
Okay. That's probably a good idea. So before we do that, I do have one last question for Dr. St. Arnold. The statement that you made about the three parts to the required testing, the English proficiency or the third one, Are those requirements for admission, or are those kind of guidelines?
No, they're requirements for any student who came into Aspen previously had to pass all three HESI exams. What we discovered is that in that process, students were allowed to take the HESI exams more than once, and perhaps more than twice. But before they came in, they had to pass them 100%. Now we're saying that there's a relationship there, and no student will be allowed to take them more than once. They have to pass all three exams on the first time to enter our approved program.
Okay. Thank you.
And that rule is not, you know, that's ours. We chose to strengthen the requirements in that way.
Okay. All right. Unless there are further questions, I would entertain a motion to go into executive session to get clarification on a couple of issues, Can I get a motion?
It's Susan Cardullo. I'll make the motion. We go to executive session.
Yep. Mike Romano, second.
Second. And let's get a vote.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Lang.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace. Mr. Wallace. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
And Mr. Wallace, by a thumbs up, because you're on mute.
Hi.
Great. Got them all. So the motion passes. I will move everybody, our group, into a breakout room. And I hope this works. This will be the second time we've tried this. So let's hope for good luck here.
It's 2:45 and we are back in regular session.
And that would be 11:45 Arizona time.
Good point. Thank you very much. Mr. LaMountain, do you need to retake the roll call? I'm not sure that all the board members are back. You're muted. Sorry.
Thank you. Yes, Dr. Mittman?
Present.
Dr. Leck?
Present.
Mr. Romano?
Present.
Mr. Ball?
Present.
Mr. Wallace? Mr. Wallace? And Ms. Cardullo?
Present.
Okay. Mr. Blanchard, could you reach out to Mr. Wallace and make sure that he knows we're back on?
I will do that.
Thank you, sir. So we have quorum.
Okay. All right. So I will make a motion to offer an amended stipulated agreement to include probation for a minimum of 1 year. The board directs staff to identify the additional terms of the stipulated agreement based on the report, the staff report, and this meeting's discussion. The amended stipulated agreement will be brought to the next board meeting on September, whatever the date
is. October. Dr. Mendez, it'll be in October, I believe it's 27.
October 27. Can I get a second?
This is Susan Cardillo. I'll second the motion.
Okay.
Dr. Mendez, this is Assistant Attorney General James Mayan. Yeah. I just want to clarify. You said an amended stipulated agreement for probation, correct?
Yeah, an amended stipulated agreement to include probation for a minimum of 1 year.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Is there any other discussion or comments from the board? Hearing none, Mr. LaMountain, please call the vote.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace? Mr. Wallace? Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 5 ayes, 1 absent, that motion passes.
Thank you very much. As we return to the rest of the agenda, I'm going to depart and turn the meeting chair over to our vice chair, Mr. Romano. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you, Dr. Mittman. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. LaMountain, recognizing we have gone really long on this first one, we readjusted the agenda already, trying to be respectful to the other schools here. It would be acceptable to the collective group. I suggest maybe we do the executive report and the budgetary information and the student tuition recovery fund invoicing at the end of the agenda today. And we move forward with the review of the and discussion possible action of following student tuition recovery fund claims and then move into the school discussions if that seems appropriate.
That's great. Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. So with that, we will move forward with item number 7 on the agenda, or I'm sorry, item number 8 on the agenda, which is the review, discussion, and possible action on the following student tuition recovery claims, fund claims. Mr. Blanchard, would you like to add any additional color on that?
Mr. Chair, no. All the information was provided in the report, and the students submitted all the documentation regarding the amount of the claims. I'll answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Ms. Blanchard. Any questions from fellow board members or a motion to approve? Hearing no questions, I'll go ahead and throw out a motion. If we need to do them separately, we can. So I'll just take the first one. I'll make a motion that we approve the student tuition recovery fund claim for student AC for the amount of
$2,900. Is there a second?
Yeah, I'm sorry. The total amount is $2,980.
My apologies. $2,980.
Thank you.
I'll make that motion.
This is Dr. Leck.
All right. Any further discussion? Mr. Lamont, if you would, take call.
Dr. Mittman is absent. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace? Mr. Wallace, absent. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye, but you're four ayes and two absent. That motion passes.
Very good. I'll move to making a second motion for student TR related to the student tuition recovery fund claim for the amount of $2,980. Again, approved.
This is Dr. Leck. I'll second.
Any discussion? Mr. LaMountain, if you would take roll.
Dr. Mittman is absent. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace? Mr. Wallace is absent. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of four ayes, two absent, that motion passes.
Thank you very much. We will now proceed to item number 10 on the agenda. That's the review, discussion, and possible action on the following change of ownership application, in this case for American Home Inspectors Training Institute, and I am the lead on that one. Mr. LaMountain, would you like to offer any type of summary?
Mr. Romano, members of the board, all of the information is provided in your board report. And as a reminder, this particular institution has physical presence in Arizona by the nature of their offering programs physically in a hotel in the state of Arizona. So outside of that, everything else is inside of your report.
Thank you. And who do we have representing the school today?
My name is Jamie Illingworth. I'm compliance analyst with the American Home Inspectors Training.
Very good. Will you be representing the school today,
Ms. Ellsworth? Yes. Well, I'm representing the school. We also have Rebecca Pilsingrud, VP of Compliance, Stephanie Gones, compliance analyst, and Tom McDermott will be joining us. He is our CFO if we have any financial questions.
Very good. Appreciate that. Would you like to make an opening statement?
Our school has recently undergone a change of owner. Our full name is Ambition LLC, DBA American Home Inspectors Training, and now Ambition LLC and its subsidiaries is owned by the CE Shop LLC. So that's the change of ownership, which we will be addressing today.
Very good. I don't want to try and summarize the whole package, but I think from what I've read, of the materials at a high level, it would seem that Lifelong Learners Enterprise LLC is looking to kind of part ways with the American Home Inspecting Inspectors
yes.
Training to the CE Shop LLC.
Yes. So the previous owner was Lifelong Learner Holdings, and they have sold the company to the CE Shop LLC. So our ownership, instead of being LLH, is now moving to the CE Shop LLC. And then the name, Ambition, and American Home Inspectors Training is all remaining the same.
Okay. Thank you. In reviewing it, and I appreciate all the time you've put in the preparation of the materials. Thank you very much for that piece of it. I really don't have any financial questions, although some of my fellow board members may. I did want to come around to maybe one piece that was a little confusing to me, specifically in the refund policy that the school has. If I understand it correctly, if a student is under 50% complete of the online materials and the live classes have not started, they would receive a full refund minus the $150 fee. Is that correct?
Let's see. So looking at our refund policy,
yes, that's
correct. Within the 5 days, business days of purchase, correct? Yes.
So I think where I'm trying to get a little clarity is,
if a student who's less than 50% complete with the online materials but attends, let's say, one day of class, how would that student be treated? Is that now you're keeping 50% of the tuition, and how is that consistent with the requirements?
Let's see. Rebecca, did you, I heard you chime in there. Did you want to jump in and speak to the refund policy there?
So we have a pretty generous refund policy. So we will refund the purchase price if the refund is requested within 30 days of purchase and the course is not more than 50% completed.
Okay, so a student could technically attend a class, and as long as they haven't completed 50% of the online work, then you would still offer them that full refund. Is that how I'm to interpret that?
That's correct.
Okay. There may be opportunity, just because you do use very specific language that calls out that, you know, as long as a student has not started their any in-person classes. So I would just ask that you maybe take a look at that and see how you refine that. We always try and have a sensitivity from how a student might interpret those, and to try and help the institution as well avoid any type of confusion with students that ultimately elevate to a complaint that comes to the board. So
yeah, just, absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll definitely take a look at it.
Great. And certainly by all means, very generous policy, very student centric. So thank you for that piece of it. All right. My other two questions are probably just more like trying to get my arms around the current market and what that looks like for students as well. We've seen a little bit of a slowdown in the real estate market as a whole, and we've also seen where buyers are foregoing home inspections as a whole, and I'm just wondering how you see that possibly impacting the business, or I should say really the students' education that they would receive to you, how that might be at risk down the road, or maybe not at all. So this is much more opinionated and speculative on the school's behalf, but given you're so close to it, I'd appreciate some additional color in that.
Yeah, sure. So this is Rebecca again, and you know, we're just kind of getting into the whole home inspection thing, so we're still kind of newbies, at least from a CE shop perspective. So I came from the CE shop, and we do real estate education, so pre-licensing courses in order to go get your real estate license, continuing education courses, et cetera. So we're still within that real estate industry, just, you know, on the more real estate broker side versus home inspection. But I will say that, you know, currently, and this is off the top of my head, about half of the states don't have any home inspection regulation. And we are seeing that more and more states are coming online with requiring more education or different education and creating new governing boards within their states. So I don't see that it's going away necessarily. I see it only probably being more heavily regulated in the future. And then, you know, I don't know about the market per se. I mean, things are so crazy right now. Everything's up and down. I mean, as you know, I'm sure in Arizona, real estate is insanely out of control as it is everywhere else. So, you know, people foregoing a home inspection, I'm not sure that's the route I would personally take, but, you know, we just want to make sure that we're kind of starting to cover all of that real estate industry education where we can. Does that help?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Like I said, it's purely speculative, but being that you're getting into that now, maybe an area of concern or awareness, I'm sure it'll be much more high on your radar than it is on mine. So I appreciate that.
I will. Mr. Romano, yes. Tom McDermott, I'm the CFO here at the CE Shop, and I was wondering if I could give you a bit of a market overview and maybe address your final question, which was around delivery of service to the students.
Certainly.
So I'll echo what Rebecca said. It's obviously a different macroeconomic environment than we've seen for a while, but We employ a couple of trainers ourselves, so we have instructors on our payroll, and we also leverage contractors and outside resources to help supplement them during peaks. So in terms of delivery of service, we can flex our ability to deliver live classes to our students with contract resources in state to deliver those services without disrupting them or creating problems internally should the market go up or down. And so that's how we maintain a sort of a consistent deliverable to the students. But to echo what Rebecca said, we are just learning more about the inspector training market. It has slowed, but so too has the overall real estate market in the last couple of months, but not to a point where it's a problem.
Thank you, Mr. McDermott. I appreciate the additional color on that. I will turn it over to my fellow board members to see if you have any questions regarding the change of ownership. See how good you all did with setting that the material so crisp for us. And thank you, staff, for making it so clear as well. With that, then, I'd like to go ahead and make a motion that we approve the change of ownership application with maintaining the surety bond in the amount of $33,762. Do I have a second to that motion?
It's Susan Cardillo.
I'll second.
Oh, or Ty.
School, the institution, do you agree to the sustainment of that surety bond for the amount of $33,762?
Yes, absolutely.
Very good. Mr. Lamont, would you please take roll?
Dr. Mittman. Dr. Mittman is absent. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 5 ayes, 1 absent, that motion passes.
All right. Congratulations again. Thank you very much for the time you took in preparing the materials and participating with us today. We realized we've gone a little bit long in some of our agenda items and pulling people forward. So we appreciate your patience and we look forward to the continued partnership in Arizona. Thank you so much and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. With that, we can move on to agenda item number 11. I don't think we've ever been up to 11 items on the agenda, but hey, it's always fun to break new territory. With that, that's the review, discussion, and possible action of the following pending license applications. In this case, under the initial applications for licensure, with the first one being the Accurate Medical Solutions, the coding class, where Ms. Cardullo is the board lead on that.
Mr. Romano, thank you. I'd like to start by introducing everyone to Accurate Medical Solutions, doing business as the medical coding class. And is Claudine Rawson here or someone to represent the institution? Let me see here which names I might recognize.
She's on.
Sorry, I'm here. I was on mute. This is Claudine.
That's okay. Ms. Rawson, can you go ahead and start with an opening statement and let us know a little bit about you?
And the school. My name is Claudine Rawson. I am the founder and managing director of Accurate Medical Solutions. And basically what we offer is online classes. We offer two different types of classes. One is self-paced and one is an instructor-led course. I'm a licensed instructor with the American Academy of Professional Coders. And what we do, and I use their material in order to prepare students to take the certified professional medical coding exam to become a CPC.
That's great. Thank you. And I just wanted to comment for my fellow board members to be aware that Ms. Rawson has been working on this with staff for about 6 months now. So congratulations. Your hard work shows. We have many great documents that we've been given to review that you've provided. So thank you for that. I'll start out with just a couple questions that I had, and then I'll open it up to see if my fellow board members have questions as well. The first thing I just wanted to say, I noticed in some of the documents it mentioned a hybrid program, but I think that since the writing of some of those materials, you worked with staff to work that out. Is that correct?
Yes. I think there was some terminology differences. The hybrid to me was my instructor-led class where they're doing a lot of the work in the self-paced course, and then we meet once a week, based on the syllabus and discuss what their assignments were. So I changed that from hybrid to instructor-led to be more clear.
So if we look at all of your current materials and anything else you're putting out, you're no longer referring to hybrid. Hybrid is kind of a technical term that refers to sometimes in-person versus online. And what you're doing is a mix of synchronous and asynchronous. So that satisfies that question. So it is all online. I see that you've got your rates posted, your graduation rate of 85%, placement pass rate for the exam of 70%, and then 47% placement rate. Is 47% placement rate, is that an ongoing concern, or what is that reflective of?
A very small percentage of students. I have a very small percentage of students right now. And then when I first started, it was during the pandemic. And so medical offices were closed. And people, I refunded people during the pandemic. Life was crazy during that time. So some didn't want to make any changes at that time. So I refunded, and just a really small percentage of students.
Okay. That makes sense. One thing I did notice, it says you have a statement that says students who complete the course are likely to pass the exam. It gets weird when you say, comments like it's likely and stuff. It's better to quantify. But what you did do is you just show your pass rates. And if you are comfortable just showing that, that's better than just saying, and you're likely to pass, because then they say, well, how could you possibly guarantee that? How do you know? Right. So,
right.
That's all. And then the last comment I was just going to make, in advertising, item 11, it says you have everything you need to become a CPC in months instead of years, but actually, they do need years to become a coder, right? Because they need the 2 years experience.
I can clarify that, but they do need, well, the class itself counts as 1 year experience. And then I have included in the cost, I have included the AAPC, which is the American Academy of Professional Coders. They have a practicum. So if they complete the practicum, which is 660 cases, I do believe, that counts as their second year of experience. So they can do that. That is doable within I'd say a year, honestly, and I can change that statement.
That was my one concern. If you could indicate that students who complete the course and the practicum,
okay.
If you say that, I think that'd be good. Okay. Other questions from my fellow board members?
I'll jump in really quickly. I realize that your office or address is purely for administrative purposes. I was trying, though, to appreciate, based off your facility information form, you identified 250 square feet that you'd be utilizing. And then in the floor plan, it was a little unclear. The way it looked, I don't know if you're, like, just in one office within that floor plan, or maybe if you could just help me appreciate how you're utilizing that.
Sure. It's actually like an executive office space. I can use it when I want to. I didn't want my home address on the internet, so I rented like an executive office, and I'm not there all the time, but if somebody really wants to meet with me physically, I can use that space, like a shared office.
Okay. Is that set up in a way, and I totally appreciate the shared space concept, is that set up in a way that if a student did come to that location, that they would be received in a way that they'd be able to get in touch with you or that?
Yeah, they have a reception area where they could, I didn't mean to cut you off, but yes, they would, the reception would get in contact with me.
Thank you. I appreciate that. No other questions from me.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Romano. Anyone else for the board questions? I'm sorry. I'm trying to change my settings so I can see everybody. And so I think I might have just shared myself to the world, but if you are raising your hand or trying to comment, I can't see. So Mr. Romano, unless you hear anything else, I think that is the end of the questions.
Would you like to make a motion, Ms. Cardillo?
Thank you. Yes, I would. I would like to make a motion that we approve the conditional non-accredited degree program license application from Accurate Medical Solutions, with the stipulation that the $15,000 surety bond will be maintained.
Do we have a second?
Scott Wallace will second it.
Mr. Wallace beat you just by a little, Dr. Lex, so we will take that second from Mr. Wallace. Any further discussion by the board? Ms. Rosen, do you agree to the surety bond maintenance of $15,000?
Yes. Yeah.
Wonderful. Mr. Romano, would you please take the roll?
Dr. Mittman. Dr. Mittman is absent. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 5 ayes, 1 not voting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 1 not voting. The motion passes.
Very good. Ms. Rosen, your 6 months' worth of hard work has come to a successful conclusion here. Congratulations with that. We wish you the best of luck and obviously continued partnership with us. So thank you very much for your time today and your preparation of the materials.
Thank you. And I really appreciate your staff working with me so diligently. They have been absolutely wonderful.
Yes.
We appreciate them as well. Thank you for that.
Thank you, staff.
All right, we will move on to the Institute of Brain Education. Mr. Ball, you are the lead on this.
All righty. All the way from Sedona. And do we have a representative from the school here?
Yeah, I can make an opening statement.
Okay, please do.
Good afternoon, Mr. Vice Chairman and board members. My name is Michael McCann. I'm the General Counsel and Director for Compliance for the Institute of Brain Education, or IBE. And with me today are Steve Kim, our Chief Administrator, Joy Kim, our Campus Director, and I think possibly our consultant, April Courtwright, may join us shortly. I'd like to thank the board and Mr. LaMountain and his staff for assisting us in this application and helping get us here today. The institution of Institute of Brain Education was established in 2002 as a vocational school to teach healing arts and is currently licensed by the Arizona State Board. Our school has offered 3 vocational programs: health coaching, massage therapy, and integrative energy healing. In around 2021, in response to the increasing demand for earth sustainability solutions and mindfulness practices, IBE began discussions to expand its program offerings to include 2 new master's degree programs, a Master's of Science in Regenerative Earth Management and a Master of Arts in Integrative Brain Education. Partly due to the pandemic, we witnessed the growing interest and demand for brain-focused mindfulness training in schools and businesses. There were quite a few mental health issues in dealing with changes in the social dynamic due to the pandemic. We'd like to respond to this demand by adding a master's degree program for integrative brain education, which broadly covers subjects related to mindfulness, emotional well-being, and self-regulation. With the increase in public awareness of the climate concerns and demand for corporate responsibility to address these challenges, professionals equipped with knowledge and skills in sustainable practices, we think, will be widely needed. By adding a master's degree program for regenerative earth management, We want to serve groups and organizations that are dedicated to implementing sustainable practices in their culture. We are now seeking approval to offer these two master's degree programs with the Arizona State Board. In tandem with our application for state approval, IBE will also begin to pursue the national accreditation process with DEAC, as well as inclusion in SARA when appropriate. We think these initiatives will contribute to the Institute's growth and positive impact on the communities of interest. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I just have one or two questions. Could you explain the relationship that you have with STI Network?
Yes. The Institute of Brain Education is an LLC, and STI Network is a regular C corporation, which is the sole member of Institute of Brain Education. So traditionally, you would think of it as a parent company. And the STI Network is solvent and is prepared to financially back IBE.
Have you had, I noticed you didn't submit any financial statements. Is that correct?
We should have. You may not have the most up-to-date documents, but I can get those to Mr. LaMountain. But, you know, looking at our balance sheet, I can tell you that we've got STI has over $500,000 in liquid assets that's prepared to fund IBE, because IBE, obviously, if you've seen those financial statements, is not prepared for this kind of expansion on its own.
Right, right. And you're located downtown Sedona, right?
Yeah, that's where our proposed lease office location would be, yes.
Okay, okay. Do any of the professional educators on the board have any questions?
Looks like Mr. LaMountain has his hand raised.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Ball, members of the board, in terms of the financials, they are in there. I will make sure that Mr. Wallace and the rest, that it's clear. This is an institution that's been licensed by our board for many years. They've recently gone through their renewal process for their vocational license program. So I'll make sure that I get that to you. And we saw no issues when we reviewed it.
Thank you, Mr. LaMountain. We know we've been working on some different file structures and Google documents and that. And so that may have just been an oversight by Mr. Ball. No worries. I'm sure other board members have had a chance to review it as well. Dr. Leck.
I actually had a question. I was curious, based on the overall topic of your institute, how a Master's of Arts was what you came upon with one of those degree titles versus science, considering it's mostly around brain. I was curious about that.
Steve, would you like to answer that?
Yes, I can answer the question. Thank you for the question, Dr. Leck. And this program originally was developing in Korea, and we applied that. We started using that for the school program first, and then it has been, actually, I'm running a business in New York City, and we are working with the public schools, and they're currently one of the main the topics in social emotional learning, SEL, is about the regulation of the emotional and emotional behaviors. And it's mostly focused on their brain conditions. So, there are two reasons. It's more, it will address more, current trending, interests, and also, functionally, it's more specifically how to train, kids and teachers how to regulate their emotions and behaviors, which is primarily the function of the brain. So that's the background of the naming of the brain education.
Okay, so more like psychology, that type of area versus actual brain science and
right.
Like that?
Right, yeah. Right. It's not about neuroscience. It's about the psychology the self-regulation.
Okay. And then just one follow-up question. Are you guys, I might have missed it, but are you going for accreditation? Are you in the process? Are you interested in doing that or you're not?
We are. We started, we submitted the accreditation, we submitted the accreditation, our commitment to accreditation, attestation. And then we initially contacted the DEAC, and then we are in the process of self-evaluation now. It'll take up to 2 years. But we'll start this year. The DEAC has annual workshop in Arizona, Scottsdale in Arizona. And that will be our official beginning of the accreditation process. By attending the workshop, and we'll apply for the formal the accreditation process. And so while we are working with the DEAC for the accreditation process, we'll also continue our self-evaluation.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes, I had a question around the org chart in support of the school. I can see Ms. Joy Kim is in a number of administrative capacities for the school and in the support. I'm trying to get my arms around who might oversee the financial aid support for the students, especially as you continue to proceed with down the accreditation path.
Yeah, we have somebody separate who's not on this call, but Ms. Vicky O. But financial aid could be a ways off in the future, we think. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. That we need accreditation. We will vigorously pursue accreditation, and then hopefully our students will qualify.
Okay. I was just trying to get a perspective on that, realizing you're kind of going down that path and working from that standpoint. Any concerns with, in this case, for your director of admissions and your director of student service affairs, being that same individual and the ability to support the students from that capacity? I realize enrollment may be small at the onset, but that could become quickly overwhelming for an individual. And I'm just trying to ensure that the students have the right type of academic support on campus as well.
Yeah, we're taking one step at a time. So as we grow, yes, staff will be added. And clearly that will call for two different individuals to fulfill those roles. We plan to grow slowly. And we're very aware of Sarah and the challenges involved in soliciting out-of-state students. So we're going to start, keep everything within Arizona. And I was paying attention to the presentation this morning during Aspen. And we'd like to stay away from those kinds of challenges. So, yes, your point is well taken.
We appreciate that. Okay. That was all the questions I had, Mr. Paul.
Real quick, none of these are licensure programs, though, correct? Like, there's no license that gets attached to any of these in any state that you're aware of?
No. As far as I know, there's no license or any type of certification is required for both of the programs.
Okay. Well, that negates a lot of the earlier discussion. I was just trying to check. If there's licensure attached, then obviously you have to figure that out if you're going to offer it to students, but that's a little bit different.
Any other questions? Okay. Hearing none, I will make a motion that the board approve the conditional vocational program license application for the Institute of Brain Education with the stipulation that the $15,000 bond be maintained.
Mr. Ball, just to clarify, it is actually conditional non-accredited degree license?
This is the conditional non-accredited degree program license application, yes. Sorry.
Well, this is Scott Wallace. Second it.
Thank you, Ms. Wallace. Any further discussion? Yeah. Does the institution agree with the maintaining of the surety bond of $15,000?
Yeah, that's fine. Sure.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the acknowledgement. Mr. LaMountain, would you please take roll?
Great. Dr. Mittman. Dr. Mittman is absent. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 5 ayes, 1 absent, that motion passes.
Wonderful. Congratulations, Mr. Kim and Mr. McKen. We appreciate your time today on the call. Please go off and prosper, and we'll continue on. Fellow board members, I know we've been going at this for quite a while now, about 2.5 hours. Does it make sense to take about a 10-minute break here and come back? Or do you want to continue to move through this, try to get through these last two schools before we get into some final school discussion with one non-student complaint and then the executive director update?
This is Susan. I wouldn't mind even a 5-minute break, bathroom break.
All right. I think judging from the looks on the screen, we will go ahead and take a recess until let's do 12:40. So that's give or take about 13 minutes from now. Do I need a motion for that, Mr. Lamont?
You don't.
All right. We will reconvene then at 12:40 p.m. Arizona time. But thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And I know we have about 30 seconds before 12:40. I see Mr. Wallace back on, Mr. Ball back on, Mr. Lamont, I see you as well. Dr. Leck, are you back on? Very good. Dr. Leck. Ms. Cardullo? Ms. Cardullo, are you on as of yet? Maybe if we're just another minute here. Ms. Cardullo, are you back on?
I am. Sorry about that. No my worries. My camera's been acting up.
No worries. Just wanted to.
But I'm here. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Okay. All right. Mr. Blanchard, are you also on?
Yes, sir. I am. I would put on my camera, but I just like looking at all you nice people.
All good from that standpoint. I want to make sure. Ms. Rome, are you also back on?
I am on as well.
Very good. Okay. All right. And Mr. Monahan?
Sit next to Mr. Blanchard.
There you go. All right. I did not know you two were sharing office space today. All right. We will call this meeting back to order at 12:41 Arizona time. And we will move on to school number 3 under the initial applicants for licensure, Pathways College, with Dr. Leck as the board lead.
Thank you, Mr. Romano. We were reviewing Pathways College, so I'd like to see if a representative of the institution would like to make an opening statement.
Yes, I would. I'm John Hall, by the way. Hello, board members and attendees. I am the chancellor of Pathways College, a private not-for-profit college that is incorporated in California in 2015. I founded the college to provide an option for at-risk students to pursue a higher education at an affordable price point, and am pleased with the progress that we have made in the past few years. We have had our first graduates in both of our bachelor degree programs and achieved WASC accreditation in March 2022. WASC has also approved our move
the move for moving our headquarters to Arizona, pending notification that that has taken place. We have applied for Title IV funding. The Department of Education has reviewed our documents and is awaiting the results of this meeting before moving forward with our application. We are excited to move into the Phoenix area, and we feel we can contribute to the Arizona post-secondary goal, adding another option for Arizona students to earn a college degree. I'd like to introduce the folks that are here with us. Melinda, and you have a list of those. Melinda Lester is the Chief Financial Officer, Chief Academic Officer. Cynthia Harson is Chief Financial Officer. Carla Fisher is the Interim On-Site Administrator. Bob Paxson is a consultant. Beth Price is an Accreditation Liaison Officer. And Doris is an Executive Assistant. And we're now ready to answer any of your questions.
Great, thank you. And welcome to all of you. I do, going through all your materials, have a good amount of questions just to vent out with you, and then I'll turn it over to my fellow board members. The first one, so obviously you're moving to Arizona, and you currently hold WASC approval. In the documentation, it looked like you got approval for an additional location. Like it doesn't state in the WASC approval of additional location that it is a full administrative move. Do they know that you're actually moving to Arizona, or how does that work?
Yeah, I can answer that question. This is Beth Price. They know that we are moving our headquarters to Arizona, and they're just waiting for that approval to make it final. And they have actually approved our move. And we will be retaining our location in California as well to be able to offer education to students in California as well.
Okay, got it. Great. Thank you very much. So when we look at your facility, you provided floor building plans and stuff, and the floor plans look to be about 1,500 square feet. About 500 of those square feet are for employees and employee space as far as break rooms, et cetera, and 1,000 of it looks like it's for administrative space. And so, and then in total, it looks like 3 to 5 parking spaces. So one of the things that I have questions about is in the materials, you talk a lot about having face-to-face activities or hybrid classes and welcoming students for, you know, grievance hearings and whatnot, but 1,000 square feet isn't even big enough for a classroom in my experience. And so I'm just trying to understand, how does that fit into the materials that I read in like your catalog and in some of the other documentation where it's saying, hey, students come to our physical space, but it's really small.
Yeah, well, we're an online college. But if students wanted to come in for tutoring, you know, one-on-one, that's what we really had in mind, or dealing parents or whatnot. Melinda, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, we're actually in a space that is taken up by a charter school, and possible affiliation or partnership with them to be able to utilize some of their spaces of possibility. So even though we're online and we pretty much do everything online, we wanted to be able to have some space available if we need it. At this point in time, we don't have any programs that are we do have a hybrid approved program in California, but we have not utilized that part of the program yet. But we want to have the flexibility to be able to do that.
Okay, so based on what you're saying, I think you guys probably have to go back into your facilities and equipment section of your catalog, because it literally says this facility, and we're talking about the one on 7th Street, is designed with the student in mind to include light, spacious classrooms equipped with ample workspace for individual and group work. The classrooms offer a productive working atmosphere and include equipment such as smart boards, wireless access, projectors, and right? So it's really, that gives the student an impression of something that they won't find at your location right now.
No problem.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
And so, I mean,
running an online institution or programs, I totally get. Is your staff going into that 1,000 square feet? Like, or are they all virtual? So, like, what is that 1,000 feet going to be used for?
Melinda?
Carla Fisher. While interim in this role, yes, by accreditation, we need to have some folks on site. And so we will have on-site administrators there. We also will have some desk space for adjuncts to come in if they need copies, if they need any kind of support. And so, yes, there will be a presence on that 7th Street.
Okay. All right. So moving then I'm assuming, because in your grievance process, the only thing I just want to caution is you also say that students can go participate in that face-to-face or online, which I totally get. I do both as well, but if there's not enough sufficient people, ample people at that location to run a grievance process, then you might want to consider taking that out if you want them all to do that via Zoom, because that's not what that space is supposed to, you know what I mean? So just making sure that whatever you offer them to do, you guys can do.
Quite well taken. Thank you.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. The next thing I would like to just make sure I understand is admissions requirements. So in the admission requirements for your degrees, I believe you have different bullet points, and they all make sense to me. Your GPA is probably a little bit lower, but it matches what your mission is. It's right, but you're trying to help the people who haven't had opportunities before, and that's really great. Obviously, we all have to graduate students, so that's really the challenge, right? Versus, say, a competitive admissions institution, which I don't think is ever acknowledged by anyone, maybe in certain places in the country, in government. But that said, you have a policy that says that if applying for transfer credit, academic transcripts from colleges or universities accredited by Department of Ed, but I'm assuming you mean officials, right? So that you can't produce unofficials to have the credit applied. So I thought you might want to just throw in the word official in there, since it's your final admissions.
I will.
That is a requirement, is official transcript.
Okay. And then you have a 2.0 progression requirement for all students, but it didn't look like you had an admission GPA. So it's like you have a high school diploma, you have a GED, whatever the score is, you'll take them in. Correct?
Correct.
Okay. There are some states that I have run across in my lifetime that have had GPA requirements to graduate high school of like a 1.0, like the equivalent of a D. So, I don't know if you've seen that yet, but there could be some, less prepared people in that bunch.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Okay. Thank you.
And then to clarify, I can see that on the degree programs, but on your certificate programs, it doesn't look like there's even a high school or a GED requirement, even though they're taking college classes. Is that correct?
The certificate classes were meant to be more of a workforce development type of course. So yes, even though they're run by the college, they're really a workforce development certificate. So they don't get a degree. It's not a degree program.
So it just really will depend on what your purpose of that certificate is. Like, if you're thinking that is going to get covered for FA purposes, I don't know the rules around what you're specifically talking about, but I just wanted to just bring it up and say you might want to check, because, like, the ability to benefit and stuff, all that is a lot to know. And I just wanted to make sure that if that's really what you meant, was that it didn't have it. So if it doesn't, that's fine. I'm just trying to clarify.
Thank you.
I also started reviewing your textbook lists, and I had a couple questions. Number one is, some of those textbooks look pretty old. I'll give you an example. You have an analysis of podcasts and films, and the textbook was produced in 2009. And I'm just going to suggest, in the last, 12 years or whatever, I think the podcast world has completely changed. And so I was just noticing that some of that
could be old. You also have like another one for your BOS 332 class, Strategic Management and Business Policy, where the textbook is 2003. So that's, you know, we're coming up on 20 years, right? Just 20 years.
Yeah.
20 years. And so you might want to review those.
Yeah, I'll check with the faculty and the librarian on those two specifically. Did you have any others that you noticed?
No, but they were all like that. It seemed like a lot of the books I saw were like 2014 and maybe a little bit older, like within that 5-year range. Interestingly enough, I didn't see anything current, but that led me to my next question, which is how do they get the textbooks?
They're all online, open source textbooks. So we have a library and the textbook is actually, attached to the Canvas site, where they take their courses, the learning site. The textbook is an open source document.
Okay. And so that was interesting because some of them just had like the ISBN, whatever it is, right? Yep. Number on it. And so I didn't know if they had to go buy it or they, you know what I mean? Versus you had others that had links in there. So I could tell it was like an electronic document. Right?
Yeah. It could be that they've been updated since then. I just, you know, have not, I'm not seeing that particular one, but that all the books are open source at this point.
Okay. That's helpful. I also noticed, and this is really small, but there is a typo on one of the certs, and I really can't tell. Because I took a screenshot of it. It is one that's occupation for human relations or business manager. The total tuition and fees in the line is $1,584, but above it, you actually have the $196 per credit for total tuition of $1,764. So I don't know where the difference came from. I thought it was a typo, but I don't know. I can't figure it out.
Is that for the enrollment costs you're talking about in the catalog?
No, it's not in the catalog. It's on your program form for one of your certs.
Okay.
On one line, it shows a higher tuition than on another line.
The only thing I could think of is it could be the cost. No, that wouldn't be a tuition. I was thinking of the STRIF fee for California, but that probably for that.
I think something just happened somewhere along the way.
Must have been a typo. Yeah, I'll check it out.
Okay. And then, you know, you have accreditation, so I'm just, this is just a question. Your courses are one of the shortest I've ever seen as far as 4 weeks and 3 semester credits, right? And so when you take the Carnegie unit and you divide that down, you're looking at 11 hours of seat time per week per course, plus another 22 hours outside of that, right? So some equivalency thereof. And we all know we have to show that through the federal compliance component of being credited. For your particular institution with your mission, I was curious as if you could speak to the fact that that's 33 hours of being in school, right? And they're working adults from what you say. So that's, and you know, 73 hours plus you've got life and stuff. And so my concern really was just, is this even achievable for a student who isn't, who probably hasn't demonstrated in the past that they have self-motivation? Not all of them. I'm not saying all of them, but you are really trying to help a student who hasn't opted into education based on prior, you know, experience. Is that achievable? Because that is a lot in a short amount of time.
Understood. You know,
we went over with our faculty on this, as a matter of fact, and one of our faculty members went to National University, which is in San Diego and a competitor, online school. And she went through this 4-week program. Now, I don't think she's an at-risk student, which is not really dealing with the questions you're saying, but she was very encouraging about the fact that we should offer it. Now, we're currently not offering it, but, we put it in there so that we could. And at the end of the day, the fairest measurement is results. So we'll have to figure out whether they can or they can't. But I think you raise a very interesting question, and it's one that we have talked a lot internally about.
Yeah, because the worst thing, you know, if you're doing SAP and all the progression requirements, once they get into trouble, it's really hard to get out a lot of times, depending on how that works. And I've never seen a 4-week, 3-credit course personally. You know, five is even, just the amount of work of trying to prove to everyone that they can, because I just wanted to bring that up for
National University has got lots and lots of students, and they're advertising as we speak on television and on the internet for their 4-week classes. They spend a lot of money advertising that. But anyway,
do we know the results? Yeah, I mean, just knowing the results.
It's a very good question. You know, I think they'll stop spending and advertising if it's not working. But again, we had a teacher that was a part of their program and I think for a master's degree, but I don't quote me, but at the end of the day, she was very much in favor of it and for us having it. Now, whether it'll work or not, I don't know yet. The jury's out. We're not doing it currently.
Okay. All right. The next one I had is, so as I understand, when you do dual enrollment, are you charging a $2,500 flat fee to the school to offer that course? And it's their job to go find 8 to 25 students, and it's all for the $2,500 flat fee? It's not $2,500 per student, is it? Or is it?
No, it's not. It's for the class. So it would be for a school to come in and want to offer it to a minimum of 8 students, but up to 20 some students, and they would have the same price no matter which one they have. So yes, you're right. It's by the school.
Okay, got it. And then I caught this, and it made me chuckle because it's funny, and I understand how, like, you know, an academic year and a fiscal year and calendar year, but on the front of your catalog, it says that this is effective for the calendar year of July 1, 2022 to June 30 of 2023. So I thought you might want to pick a different one. I think it's probably your academic. It could be your fiscal year, but I don't think students really care what that is. So it's probably your academic year if you're like a summer header or something. So yeah, I just thought it was.
Right. Nobody caught that.
And that is
Thank you for being so thorough.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's a blessing and a curse depending on who you ask. Right, my fellow board members. Okay, well, that's the extent of the questions that I have. I'd like to open it up to any other board members.
Thank you, Dr. Luck. I have just a few maybe comments or questions here. As I was reviewing the refund policy that you provide, you provided similarly both in your EA and your catalog from that standpoint. It was a little challenging for me to kind of follow. I realize you do call out the fact that you will follow the guidelines of the Federal Return Title IV policies as called out by the Higher Education Act and then you provide an example of what that looks like, which I've seen other institutions do as well. But it seemed like where I was trying to get to or understand was, why would you just put this simple chart there showing the percent progression for the student instead of making them go to a separate location to try and understand that better? I didn't know if you had any reason behind that.
We are actually we're in the process of getting Title IV funding, and this is one of their calculations that they utilize. And in the past, we have dealt with a refund amounts, and this had changed to more of a percentage by day as opposed to, I think we did it by weeks before. So this is a definite difference that we've had. However, we're open to making a change if it's acceptable to Title IV, if it makes it easier for the student. I'm all for that.
Well, but Mike, right? You're reading something about an R2T4, right? Versus a refund policy, which are not necessarily the same thing. That's what I'm hearing. Am I wrong?
I just felt like it wasn't well represented. It seems from staff reviewing that it meets the requirements. I think part of our guidance is always like sensitivity of how it may be interpreted by a student and the opportunity to make that a little more clear for them. I think the takeaway would be, given you're trying to figure it out and you're still leaning into this piece, maybe to look at what other schools similarly do and try to mirror that. You don't need to reinvent the wheel. Many are doing it, and I think doing it a little more clearly than what you've provided here. Not that that was intentional, just merely that's where it is, right?
Perfect. Thank you very much.
And I would suggest you're looking at two different things, I think. You, the understanding of what an R2T4 requires versus what a refund policy for the institution, they're not the same.
Yeah. You see, got it. Defaulting to that. And so there's probably a little bit of opportunity there. And then my only other area of sensitivity, just trying to appreciate the WASC accreditation and being considered or going through that process. Normally with accreditors, they're usually pretty sensitive about any type of marketing materials or anything like that that call out the accreditor's name that could be misinterpreted in the process. There were some marketing materials where you had, you know, candidacy for WASC versus actually having achieved the actual accreditation. Maybe they allow that. I don't know their rules and requirements associated with that. Normally, accreditors do have some sensitivity, but it led me to just looking at some of the other marketing materials that you have. And, obviously, you need to own and be responsible for the claims that you make and what you put out there. It seemed like there were areas where you had opinions of the school versus facts, like we think. We believe, and I would just be very cautious with the statements that follow after that. There was one that said, getting a bachelor's degree secures your future, in employment or something to that effect. Those are really, those could be misinterpreted by a student. And so I would ask you, as you look through, just to be very cautious about the claims and how you bring things forward. You may be on the stretching edge of advertising there. And so I just ask that you remain cautious and cognizant.
Thank you.
I think it's a very, very good point. We will be. We'll go back and re-examine that and take a look at it.
Yeah, I don't think your intent is to mislead anyone, but sometimes schools can bring their passion forward in a way that can just be very misinterpreted by a consumer. So, and we're always sensitive about that in the state of Arizona and protecting our students and their ability to interpret that appropriately. Ms. Cardullo, I see you have your hands up.
Yes, thank you. Great information, great presentation. My question is surrounding the move to Arizona. Because I see that you've already sought approval from other states, or in other words, exemptions, because you didn't need state approvals in Illinois, Idaho, and Louisiana. So you could have gotten a similar letter from us saying you're not triggering a physical presence here, but it sounds like you're trying to physically be present here. And who is going to be an executive? Will there be some kind of leadership here in Arizona now?
Yes. You've asked a couple of questions, but yes, we will have an executive team here and there in Arizona.
Okay, great. Sorry about that. Trying to combine my questions into one.
Oh, that's all right.
That was helpful. Thank you.
Scott, do you want to ask your question?
Yes, just I looked at your latest financial statements, and shows an excess of revenues over expenses. A lot of it, a lot of it relates to the $3.7 million contribution you received. When do you anticipate that your student revenues will exceed delivery costs of education?
That's a really excellent question. I've been at that for 5 years. I think the most important thing that to get to a break even and then to profitability, or in case of a not-for-profit, excess revenues, is the fact that we get our Title IV. Our target student is a student that can't afford college. So if we can't get Title IV, that's been delayed, to be able to get Title IV is very, very important. So we've been working with them in order to get that. I think that probably within a year of receiving Title IV, we will be at about, you know, at a excess revenue place. Is that hopefully that'll answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Other board members? Okay. One last thing I just remembered, in your catalog, when you're listing off the states, so the catalog is so kind of updated as if you were here, and it's kind of not, because it says you're exempt from Arizona. So you just want to make sure you go back and change that to
okay.
Not that.
Very good point.
All right. So unless any of my fellow board members have anything else, then I would like to make a motion that we approve the regular degree granting application for Pathways College, and the institution must maintain the bond of $18,101.
We will do that.
Do I have a second?
Scott Wallace seconds it.
Okay. Any further discussion by the board? All right. Hearing acknowledgement from Mr. Hall on the surety piece. Mr. LaMountain, would you please take roll?
Dr. Mittman. Dr. Mittman is absent. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 5 ayes, 1 absent, the motion passes.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations, Pathways College. We look forward to the continued relationship with you and the continued responsiveness to our board staff. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you so much, and goodbye. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, we will move on to our last school under agenda item number 11. That's Teach Us, where Mr. Wallace is our board lead.
Thank you. Do we have a representative from the from Teach Us that wants to make an opening statement and introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you, sir. Good afternoon, board and board staff. My name is Dr. Brandon Jagannathis. I'm the managing director for Teach Us. I'm also joined here today by our chief academic officer and program director, Dr. Lori Piowski. Respectively, we worked in higher education for over 20 plus years in a variety of capacities, including instruction and accreditation. Together, we represent Teach Us, which is a newly formed company, which is currently seeking the necessary approvals to become an alternative teacher preparation pathway in the fine state of Arizona. As part of the institutional readiness review process outlined by the Department of Education, we are required to initially provide evidence of this board's approval of either exemption or, again, approval, prior to our initiation of our actual application. So given our presence in Phoenix, we are seeking the board's approval today, and we welcome questions.
Thank you. I have a few questions on the lead on this. I read through your material, and thank you for providing so much material. It was appreciative, and I learned a heck of a lot. That being said, you would like to start your programs in the spring of 2023. Do I understand that correctly?
That is currently a projection. Certainly, we're subject to the timelines of the Department of Education, so we're unable to recruit or engage any students until we have all of the necessary approvals by the Department of Education there in Arizona.
Okay, can you, you know, it's a huge company that is providing your funding and so forth. Can you just give us a brief description of Bertelsmann, if I pronounced that correctly?
Absolutely. Yes, Bertelsmann is a large media services and education company that operates in over 50 countries around the world. The company has over 145,000 employees and a annual revenue generation of around almost $19 billion. From its span of different companies within that group includes everything from textbook publishers, Penguin Random House, music industry, BMG Records, and other entities that are focused specifically on educational offerings.
Yeah, good. Now, as you come into Arizona, are you going to create a separate corporation? Is it a division? What do you anticipate Arizona to represent? What kind of entity?
Sure. TeachUs has incorporated, as well as its ownership company, Versity Incorporated. Our intent is to initially offer the alternative certification program, grow, seek accreditation as part of that process, and then with success of the program, continue to potentially expand into other states as, of course, demand grows.
Okay. So when you refer to 18 billion euros or almost 19 billion euros in revenues, I saw that in your financial statement package, and it's a little bit different than your financial statements, and they are, you know, German principles and so forth, putting those financial statements together. But when you refer to 19 billion euros, you're talking about the revenues from Penguin to your educational to your media. All that is aggregated into that number there?
That is correct, sir. And as part of the application process, we have provided U.S. GAAP audited financials that represent the U.S. base of the education group itself.
Okay. I don't know that we received that. Maybe staff can clue me in on that, but yes.
So. Yes, Mr. Wallace, this is Kevin. I did want to let you know it is in there. I will make sure that I get it to the top of it. But Brandon and his group from TeachUs has done a great job of providing at great expense, a gap analysis. And I do appreciate all of the work that he's put in on this, but I'll make sure that you have that.
Well, I just want to say how much fun I had reading the German accounting principles and that detail was all translated for me. So, I thought it was pretty innovative. So, and I expect that the U.S. is going to follow pattern, but that's off the subject here. So in terms of Arizona, why Arizona?
We're very research-based. We've certainly spent quite a bit of time understanding where the teacher shortages exist. From our perspective, Arizona seems like really the prime space for us to begin engaging with school districts and develop really the very first of the TeachUs program. And so from that perspective, it's not just our own perspectives, but those of those we engage in the development of the curriculum, and that's very much a component of the Arizona Department of Education standards. So that is, of course, woven throughout the design of the program.
In your recruiting process, are you looking for students that have a college degree, or what is the process there? What's the objective?
Sure. Once we obtain this board's approval, of course, we're not recruiting students until we go through the complete board approval process through the Arizona Department of Ed. Post approval on that process, individuals that seek alternative certification pathways must have a bachelor's degree, a cumulative GPA of 2.5 or higher, and must pass standardized teaching examinations prior to entry. And those standards are established by the Arizona Department of Education. In many cases, those are current substitutes, individuals that potentially are seeking a career change. Right now with the teacher shortage, the population has become very diverse.
Yes, I could imagine. I could well imagine. What is the company's financial commitment to Arizona?
100% financial commitment. So, you know, given the, as you'll see in the financial auditing, especially the specifics within the U.S. GAAP, we will have 100% financial backing, and a commitment from, our parent company until we are profitable. And given the forecasting and so forth, you know, that can be between 4 and 5 years.
Okay. Are you elsewhere in the States here doing something similar?
No, sir.
Okay. And I saw there's, are the companies, incorporated in New York, or do you have, offices in New York, but you come in Arizona? Can you?
Exactly right.
That, please.
So the corporation is, you know, of course are out of Delaware. But the Bertelsmann organization has clustered a lot of its back office entity, in New York. And so a lot of our back office, operations, including but not limited to some of the financial, reporting as well as, human resources and other mechanisms are done centrally and are part of a service, level agreement that's established intercompany.
Okay. That's all the questions I have. Maybe some of my colleagues on the board have questions.
Ms. Cardullo, you have your hand raised?
I do. Thank you for that presentation. I really enjoyed looking at your catalog. I thought it was great. I have a couple questions about it. Around intern, you do a great job of explaining all the caveats of, like, I can't guarantee you employment. But surrounding internship, is it true that it says you assist them, or is there any guarantee of an internship placement? How does that work?
So there is no guarantee. We do provide language outlining the specific clause that states that we cannot guarantee employment. From a programmatic perspective, we provide resources and other supports that can help a student, including but not limited to access to job search portals and other things that might help empower or enable them as they are looking for those opportunities. But we do not, and very clearly state that we do not provide any guarantee of any placement specific to an internship.
Okay, so then what is the assistance that you provide for internships?
So it's twofold. I think, you know, and I'll answer one part and I'll let my colleague respond to the other. But the first is, access and curating resources that help them understand what different types of teaching opportunities exist, including but not limited to different types of subject matter test preparation that would be necessary in order for them to apply for those very specific teaching positions. Also providing them other, characteristics of those areas, including salary ranges and other things that are all publicly available, and we just certainly curate those databases. We do not re-replicate them, but certainly send the teachers in the right places so that they can do their own diligence and understanding and helping inform the decision-making process so they, in hopes, certainly can have an increased likelihood of obtaining an internship, especially in an area that they're qualified to do so. And I'll turn it over to Dr. Pialski to respond a little bit more perhaps on how we speak to the preparation of an intern.
So the clinical practice is, you know, at the heart of what we do, because we really want to get teachers in the classroom to retain them in the profession for a long time. And so one of our key elements is going to be building partnership support, and whether that's through US Prep or NCTR, we're exploring what that model might look like, but it's definitely going to be about building partnerships with districts to enable to support our candidates to find those placements.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Are there other questions from the board?
I know I always seem to come around this with sensitivity from consumer standpoint and refunds and what that looks like. I noticed in your documentation, your catalog and your enrollment agreement match, but you also provided a separate document for student refunds, specifically calling it out, which was different than that of what you have in your catalog and your EA. In that particular document, you took the time to kind of break it out by percentage for the refunds versus in the catalog and EA where you were a little more generic on that piece. I didn't know if there was any reasoning behind that or if maybe I was dealing with an outdated document.
I think that was the case, but the idea is to be as transparent and clear as possible. So given that this is a draft catalog, the feedback that we received from the board staff, of course, is aligned with that. So more transparency and visibility into how one might interpret the refund policy is our goal. So you would find our most updated version to include that in the actual catalog.
Great, thank you. That was all I had.
Any other questions from the board? Then I'd like to make a motion that we approve the conditional non-accredited vocational license for Teach Us Incorporated, subject to the $15,000 surety bond.
Do I have a second?
This is Susan. I'll second.
Wonderful. Any discussion? Does Teach Us agree with the $15,000 surety bond?
Yes, sir, we do.
Very good. All right, with that, Mr. Lamont, will you please take roll?
Dr. Mittman. Dr. Mittman is absent. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 5 ayes, 1 absent, the motion passes.
All right. Very good. Congratulations. We appreciate the time you've taken in the preparation of the materials. It does make our job much easier and the partnership that you've had with this app. We wish you the best of luck and a continued partnership as we move forward. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you. You as well.
Thank you. All right. That concludes item number 11 on our agenda. We will move to item number 12, which is the review, discussion, and possible action on a non-complaint, student complaint that came forward. And this is in regards to Allied Health Career Institute. Mr. LaMountain, would you like to give us any debrief or update?
I will turn that over to Mr. Blanchard, who has the information on that.
Very good.
Mr. LaMountain and Mr. Chair, members of the State Board, at its meeting on June 23rd, 2022, the Complaint Committee reviewed a board complaint in reference to 6 allegations regarding unpublished scholarships, discounts, tuition and fees not consistent with the Arizona license, program length not consistent with the Arizona license, the use of fee waivers, lack of licensing approval to students outside of Arizona, and there's a list of those states that were reviewed by Ms. Rome in reference to those enrollment agreements, and then the statement that COMPTA endorsed curriculum approval and stating that the campus in Virginia held accreditation through COMPTA. The institution participated in the complaint committee in review. They submitted a subsequent information regarding what the board had reviewed. That is part of the August 23rd investigative report with that documentation. I also included the June 23rd report with all the attachments that were submitted by Allied Health Career Institute, which is now known as Empower Career Training. Here to answer any of your questions from the institution is Mr. Med.
Thank you, Mr. Blanchard. Before I ask Mr. Med to come forward, I do also want to just clarify that this was originally brought to the complaint committee, or really the board staff, the board staff's attention through that of the state of Minnesota, as that state agency was reaching out to our board to get some clarification around the school and what it was offering. I mentioned that because ultimately what it showed was a period of uncompliance from that of around March 2019 through March 2022. So I just wanted to put perspective around that time frame and how it was brought to the attention of the staff and then ultimately made it to the complaint committee agenda in the June 23rd meeting. So with that, Mr. Med, if you would like to make an opening statement, understanding that the board members have had a chance to review a lot of materials that have already been provided, but we'd appreciate your perspective and any other up-to-date information you'd like to bring forward.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Romano. First, I'd like to introduce a couple other representatives from our institution. In addition to myself, Mr. Steve Chema, counsel for school, as well as Anthony King, also counsel for our school. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today. In a matter of, simplicity, I will refer to ourselves in this opening statement as Empower, which is our new recognized name, formerly known as Allied Health Career Institute. With that being said, we at Empower take being in compliance very seriously and appreciate the opportunity to work with the AZPPSE staff and board to make sure that we are in full compliance moving forward. Effective March 3rd, 2022, after feedback and direction from the Arizona State Board, AHCI Chandler and AHCI Tucson at the time, named at the time, stopped enrolling any any non-Arizona students or offering any hours less than the 700 hours of approved programming. Prior to March 3rd, 2022, AHCI accepted referrals for students outside of Arizona from AHCI's parent company, Empower Education, which is a sponsor and registrar of record for the National Apprenticeship ONET code 31-9011.00 and RAPIDS code 2091CB, which was developed in cooperation with the United States Department of Labor, and more specifically their Office of Apprenticeship. Empower Education registered National Apprenticeship referred students to Allied Health Career Institute for the related training aspect of the apprenticeship, the training that takes place before licensure and is required by most states to be conducted by a state-approved post-secondary school. It was within that context of the national apprenticeship that we offered instruction through AHCI to students outside of Arizona. We were working under the assumption, and we believed after consulting with the United States Department of Labor, that the National Apprenticeship allowed AHCI to offer programming to students nationwide as part of that federal apprenticeship. If a student resided in a state that needed less than the 700 hours of education for licensure, we allowed them to take that number of hours within that their state required and charged them proportionally less for the hours that they were not taking. And just to be clear, in some instances, students took less than the 700 hours that we have approved through this board, but never as a student received credit for hours that they did not take. Utilizing this model, over 100 apprentices were successfully able to get their state massage licenses as massage boards did recognize the program approved by this, state agency, as well as our Virginia schools approval. Having said that, AHCI understands that despite the national apprenticeship framework and allowances for training, AHCI Chandler and AHCI Tucson as licensed Arizona post-secondary schools can only enroll students into the approved program, which is 700 hours, and must seek separate approval to operate as a school or exemption to further enroll or instruct students outside of Arizona. We are taking steps and have taken steps since this has been brought to light to get direct state post-secondary licenses in any state that we wish to operate in, or get exemptions for our current licensed schools in Virginia and Arizona to operate in that particular state. For students that we had previously enrolled under the other model, we have either facilitated transfers, refunds, or we've unenrolled them in our Arizona program, and they, will enroll in a new in-state licensed post-secondary school in their particular state. We have also hired an experienced director of compliance, Christy Baumer, who brings decades of private post-secondary compliance and regulatory experience to the table, again, in an effort to make sure we are in full compliance with this board. Thank you again for allowing us to be here today and speak. We're available to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you, Ms. Mehta. I appreciate that. And certainly at our committee meeting, you did acknowledge as well that recent hiring of the compliance director, recognizing pretty significant opportunities here of just making sure the school is operating compliantly moving forward or as best as possible. I also want to acknowledge, based on the information that was provided by board staff, that you've been working with the board staff, and at this point, based on the staff review, all the outstanding issues have been resolved, and I just want to confirm that with Mr. Blanchard, if that is an accurate statement.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Blanchard. And so with that, the opportunity today for the board is to see if there are any outstanding questions or concerns by the members that the school can address, and any consideration of any additional action necessary based on the identification and corrected issues. So I will pause to see if there are any questions from the board members. Dr. Leck.
Thank you, Mr. Romano. I'm trying to understand, because it sounds almost like you were attempting to do like a transfer credit program for clock hours for students in other states that didn't match this state. Is that correct? So instead of like transferring credit hours from another institution, you're trying to transfer clock hours that they did somewhere else or that they didn't have to do because their state required less. Either way.
Yeah, for example, a neighboring state, New Mexico or Nevada, you know, they may require 500 or 600 hours of education. So, you know, we, and again, acknowledging this board's, this is not acceptable to this board, they would enroll in our institution. They would take only 500 of our 700 hours and then stop because that's what they needed for licensure in their particular state.
Yeah, so you always have to meet the minimum of the state that you're in. And so what usually happens is if another state had more, you could offer something to help them get more in their state, but not less than the state you're authorized in. Okay, now I got it. Thank you.
Any other questions or clarity from fellow board members? All right, hearing none, and I know a couple of us were on the complaints committee, so we have a chance to ask some questions prior to this. You know, fellow board members, we, in these types of situations, we have the opportunity to look at consent agreements, probation for up to, you know, a year, different penalties that we may apply as well. I know the staff has provided some recommendations around that particular piece of it, recognizing that the school has worked closely with the staff to resolve these issues and that the issues at this point have been resolved. That is very favorable, in my opinion, in how we progress forward. That said, we did have quite a long period where it was just out of compliance from a number of areas and created concern, and trying to be consistent with how we worked with other schools and applied penalties as such. I would actually like to make a motion to apply a $1,000 civil penalty for each of the following violations, and there are six in total. The first four or three in this particular case are related to the statute of 32-3051. For the grounds of disciplinary action for number seven, failure to comply with all state and federal laws relating to the operation of private post-secondary educational institutions. Number 14, the failure to follow published administrative policies, procedures, and fees of the educational institution And number 16, failure to maintain records as prescribed by rule. In addition, I would also like to apply a penalty to R4-39-109 of supplemental license applications, part A, which a licensee shall submit to the board an application for a supplemental license at least 45 days before doing any of the following, and that is offering a new or additional vocational or degree granting program. And then finally, in relation to R4-39-301 of the catalog, part A, a licensee offering a non-accredited program shall ensure that the licensee has a catalog that includes the following information, and that is part five, a list of all the programs that are offered from that standpoint. So from that, and I want to make sure I did get them all. Hopefully I did. And by all means, Mr. Blanchard, if I missed any, please call that out. But we would be looking at six civil penalties associated at $1,000 apiece. Mr. Blanchard, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair. There was six, but in your explanation on your motion, you skipped number 14, 32, 30, 51. You mentioned 7, 10, 16, and you skipped 14, failure to follow published administrative policies and procedures. But I don't want to mess up your motion, but I didn't know if you wanted to leave that one out.
No, thank you.
I just didn't know, based on the number that you're presenting, that would be the one that I didn't hear in your motion. My apologies for interrupting you.
No, not at all. Thank you for that clarification. I will amend the motion to reflect that appropriately. Number 14 is for all the failure to follow published administrative policies, procedures, and fees of the educational institution. So I will pause there to see if I have a second to that motion. If the board would like to have continued discussion.
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. What would be the date certain that civil penalty would be need to be paid by?
Great question. Board staff, do you have a recommendation?
Recommendation would be, let me see where today is. Let's make it on or before September 16th.
I will amend the motion appropriately to have that paid on or before September 16th.
And then my last clarification question, was that a non-disciplinary order for civil penalty or a consent agreement for non-disciplinary civil penalty?
It's a great question. I believe we would defer to the consent agreement.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. So amended appropriately to the consent agreement. As you can see, I do not have a legal degree on this. Bring this forward.
I'll second.
Patience with that. Thank you, Dr. Leck, for the second. Any further discussion by the board members? Hearing none at this point, and I don't believe in this particular case, I would seek the school's agreement to this. Just to verify, though, Mr. LaMountain, we can move forward with roll.
We can, correct. So, Dr. Mittman is absent. Dr. Leck?
And I apologize, Kevin. I'm trying to get to the mute button here. And if not signed, but you can either ask if they'd agree to it now, or you can put stipulations on that if it's not signed by the 16th, that something else happens.
Thank you. So institution, in this case, Mr. Med, do you agree with that, or do we need to have add amend appropriately? So this would be a $6,000 penalty.
You know, without speaking to counsel or anything like that, you know, unless, you know, Steve or Anthony, there's anything objectionable, I am for signing that and making that payment.
Well, with that, Ben, I don't believe we need to amend the motion at this point. We'll move forward appropriately, and if action is not taken by the 16th, we'll obviously take the next necessary steps. So
thank you.
With that, Mr. Lamont, if you would take roll.
Dr. Mittman is absent. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. Vote of 5 ayes, 1 absent. The motion passes.
All right. Mr. Med and institution empower, these things happen. We understand that. Obviously, you've had an opportunity to evaluate where your school's at from a compliance standpoint. You've started to take the necessary steps in the right direction. We respect and appreciate that piece of it. You've been working very closely with our staff on these types of issues, and please recognize that is our desire for you to work with us. And as you have questions, when you identify things, and we're looking for you to identify those things versus outside parties to identify that, that always works more favorably. So we'd ask for your continued partnership in that open dialogue and discussion, as you've been very responsive. So we appreciate your time. Thank you very much. And we will move on to our other parts of the agenda at this point.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Romano, I would assume that I do see that there's some folks on here. I'm not sure if they want to be part of the call of the public. So if you want to move to the call of the public next, and then we can go back up and complete the rest of the board business.
Mr. Lamont, I'd actually prefer in this particular case, is there for the public that is on, because they're longstanding with us, they may benefit from hearing some of your executive report as well. They may actually even have comment associated with that. Although we understand we won't have discussion around it and what that looks like, I'd like to remain where we have called the public at the end.
Great.
Thank you.
All right.
We'll move to where are we at? Item number 5.
Great.
You and the staff, executive director report, please.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Romano, members of the board. I provided for you, for the board, an overview of the executive director's report that has our most recent into the new fiscal year budget and budget information, which is separate from the budget that we'll cover here in a few minutes. This is our operating FY23 budget that we're currently under. The revenue, the increase in revenue from the SB 1065 is starting to be recognized in our monthly budget moving forward. That went into effect in June. So any of the institutions, it's actually May, mid part of May, that started to go into effect, and this most recent renewal cycle, all of those institutions have been billed the new rate according to SB 1065. So you can see that our revenue is increasing as we expected, and was the reason behind the movement that we did through the legislature this last session. So in terms of financials, we are in good shape. We'll continue to move forward in good shape as we move through 23. And those numbers will be reflected in the budget that you'll see here in a few minutes for FY24. That will continue to move forward. So that's good. In terms of where we are with the Student Tuition Recovery Fund, we will get to that. Again, that's another budget item. But as you can see where we are under the PV 2030-2027, strike fund, we are below the $500,000 minimum as we moved into FY23, which is why I'll be requesting an opportunity for the board to approve billing and invoicing institutions moving forward. So our current budget in strife is dollar figure in strife is $296,614. So a couple of $100,000 below the $500,000 minimum. Additional information, there were two institutions that went through a closure. Both of them very, they did a very good job of working with us as these two institutions closed. The first one is New Horizons Computer Learning Center that we did have been working with them for quite some time on making sure that we got all of the academic records and transcripts electronically, and we have acquired all of those, and we have shuttered the institution. There will be no student tuition recovery fund claims as they completed their teach out of all of the students. So we do not anticipate any student tuition recovery funds in the future. The other institution was Upper Iowa University. That is a large institution in the state of Iowa that had a campus here for a few years, and it didn't turn out the way they wanted, and they didn't really have any students in terms of records. All of those information, all of that record information goes back to the to Upper Iowa University. So that institution was also removed from licensure in the state. Current schools, this is going to be minus the ones that we just went through, the three actually that we just approved, and the fourth is already included in this current school number. We're at 231, so that will go up. We have a number of schools that are still under review and have submitted applications. So when we move through the next couple of months and get to our board meeting in October, you'll probably see about five additional institutions for initial licensure in that time frame. And you'll see the number of requests, transcript requests, over the last fiscal year and then through out fiscal 22. Service requests, you'll see, is a chart in there that shows that this is just as of this current fiscal year, the number of new locations and supplemental applications. We're about on track with where we were at this time last year. I also listed in there the education ED monitoring, those schools that are on HCM1. Thankfully, we do not have any schools at this current time that are under HCM2 monitoring. Accreditation actions, other than those that we've discussed earlier this morning with an institution, I will tell you that there's a lots of activity going on with accreditors and accreditation visits. We will continue to attend as many of those as we can, given the time frame. This was certainly a busy month with budget due and in preparation for this meeting. So plan on getting back out on the road shortly and hitting as many of those accreditation meetings as we could possibly get to. You also noticed under USDOE actions that DeVry University did receive a document from the Department of Education requesting a repayment of the $23 million in borrower defense money. That there is still some negotiation that is going on back and forth there. I don't have a clearly defined document yet that states what DeVry is intending to do with that $23 million. Obviously, there's no legislative update. I will tell you that the legislature, if you follow the primaries, has changed quite dramatically and will continue to change as we bring in that new legislature in November and then with the legislative session kicking off in January and also obviously with the change of executive with the governor's office. That is still unclear, obviously, of the direction that will go and who may or may not be our points of contact. But I will tell you that both in the House and in the Senate, our primary contacts in the education committees have changed, and we will not know who those individuals are until after the November election. And as soon as that is determined, we will move forward with making contact with the new legislature. And then lastly, a staffing update. We did hire a part-time person to help with the records, and that individual, Julie Class, starts on September 6th, and we'll be providing some additional support to Jacqueline in making sure that we deliver as quickly as possible the many, many requests that we're getting for transcript requests. Any Any questions about the executive director report?
Ms. Lamont, I did want to just seek a little clarification or color if you are able to provide it. Obviously, at our June 23rd complaints committee, New Horizons Computer Learning Center was on that agenda. We were reviewing a complaint associated with where the school was at in regards to VA approval and then possibly even some further litigation that might have been coming down. You clarified that they did actually go through a teach-out process. So from the SRIS standpoint, nothing there. But can you provide any additional color that might suggest that the board may need to give this further consideration or attention?
Mr. Romano, members of the board, thank you for the question. The institution, upon our closing out of their license, also closed out all of the concerns and issues that the other, in this case, the SAA, the State Veterans Affairs Department, had along with that. So I have received no additional complaints or concerns from either the state SAA, the Department of Veterans Affairs, anything of that nature. And we've received no other additional complaints and or challenges from any type of potential litigation that is out there. So at this time, we believe that the institution is successfully closed down. The individual, I believe, is transferring the component to another, to the school down in Tucson, where they may look at opening up a New Horizons again. It's in the Phoenix market under different ownership and a completely different structure. So, but as of right now, it is a clear on our point for the licensure.
Okay. As a final question on this, and you may or may not be able to answer it, as a result of this closure, does that prevent any individuals from seeking licensure through us in the future?
Thank you. Good question. At this point in time, as of today, the answer to that would be no, as we did not pay out, nor have there been any requests to pay out under the Student Tuition Recovery Fund, which would have been a requirement had that happened, that the individual who the owner would not be eligible for licensure in the state of Arizona. So as of right now, based on what we know, the answer that would not prevent that individual moving forward with additional school in the future.
Thank you. I appreciate that clarity. Any other questions from Mr. Lamont related to that, his executive report? All right, hearing none, we can move to agenda item number six in this case, review, discussion, and possible action on the approval of the FY23 budget of the Arizona State Board for Private Post-Secondary Education. Mr. Lamont.
Sure. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the board. You have in your board folder an executive narrative that I put together that is just a broad-based overview of the 25 or so odd pages of numbers that are associated with our budget. And you'll see at the top right, it's really very similar to previous years. We are a very lean board. We do not utilize a lot of additional resources, nor do we need it. Again, most of us are working from home. There's limited expenses. We've reduced our rent due to the space that we've given up in our 1740 building. So that number is down, which is good. The primary change this year in the budget for FY24, is the addition. So based upon the new revenue stream that we have from the increase in the SB 1065 funds, moving forward, that gives us additional revenue. A component of that revenue that we lobbied the legislature for, well, I didn't lobby because I'm not allowed to, but the information that was provided to the rationale behind that would be to add additional support services to the board. And with that, I've added a position, a full-time position next year. That position is a $65,000 salary So with benefits and employee-related expenses, that pushes that request up to $98,900 is an additional expense into FY24, and that that is supported by our OSPB analyst. And again, it was a component of the rationale for the legislative movement of SB 1065. So outside of that, there are very limited other changes that happened over FY23. A little additional travel expenditure in 24 based on a conference that some of us will be attending, and some additional local travel, which is minimal in the state of Arizona, within the state of Arizona. So our fund hasn't changed too much, but that will, with the new increase in the 1065 revenue, will keep us whole and will not cause concerns for the future for this board in terms of being able to afford maintaining our presence here. Under the PV 20 or 3027 budget for the Student Tuition Recovery Fund, the information that you'll see in there is that we are going to fall below the $500,000, and that I have reduced some expenses in this particular fund for FY24 for next year, and our anticipated revenue is we're going to talk about that here in a few minutes. Is about $380,000, $370,000 that would be added into the STRIFE account, which will push us over the $500,000. And depending upon the whether or not we have a school closure and the management of expenses, there is a possibility that we would not need additional funding in the next fiscal year. But there is still a potential that we would go one more year of billing the schools for the STRF fund in FY25, and then that would push us well over the minimum mark moving forward for potentially for a couple of years. So those are really the only changes in the budget. I have provided to you in the board all of the documentation and the submission that needs to be submitted on or before September 1st to the governor and to our OSPB group. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Fellow board members, any questions? Hearing none, and I have
when you get to the point where it's like to your minimum, do you prorate that somehow for all the institutions, or you just collect full and go way over? How does that work?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And actually, Mr. Romano had that same question a couple of days ago when we had a conversation. So we would bill once again for that amount, because we want it. Once it goes over the $500,000, if we go right to $500,000, the next day it'll be at $499,000, and we would need to go back and rebill again. So this would be one additional cycle of billing the institutions to get us and to maintain that. So let's say it moves us to $700,000 in a year's worth of expenses. It probably will not hit the five. And then we would only bill the new institutions that had never paid into it. So brand new institutions that are just becoming licensed, they would need to pay into, which would be probably minimal amount that they would pay into that. And then the other institutions would not be charged until potentially another point in time. But that's why I keep you as a board updated. Every executive director's report has where we are and where we're living in that fund, so that you know what the possibility is that we would be needing to invoice in the future.
Thank you for that.
Sure.
We've covered both the budget and the student tuition recovery fund invoicing in this, but we'll make two separate motions for that appropriately, unless there are any additional questions. Okay, so I will go ahead and make a motion that we approve the FY23 budget for the
Just a point of clarification. Sorry, Mr. Romano. It's yeah. actually FY24. In the agenda, it said 20, but it's actually 24. I'm sorry.
Thank you. I appreciate that. These fiscal years, we run on crazy fiscal years ourselves. So it's all
Not
over the
calendar
place.
Year.
Yeah, right. We just should all make it easy. So with that, I will make a motion that we approve the FY24 budget of the Arizona State Board of Private Post-Secondary Education. Do you have a second to that motion?
I'll second because it's the only financial one I'll be able to do.
Dr. Leck, we appreciate that. All right. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Mr. Lamont, would you please take roll?
Dr. Mittman. Dr. Mittman is absent. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By the vote of 5 ayes, 1 absent, the motion passes.
Thank you. We appreciate the very detailed documents that you provided and the additional commentary and support. Mr. Lamont, anything additional for item number 7 on the agenda related to the Student Tuition Recovery Fund invoicing that you'd like to bring forward to the group?
Mr. Romano, members of the board, you have in your folder what the invoice will be for the FY23. So this case, it is FY23 for the FY23 billing. All of the institutions have reported. And that number is the expectation that we will receive once the invoices go out. Again, we are below the 500,000 minimum, so this is the appropriate approach to take.
Any questions by fellow board members? I know Dr. Leck, you had asked a similar question that I had the other day as well, but I think it makes sense in regards to exceeding, so we aren't right back here from that standpoint. And then we'll obviously evaluate at the end of FY24. So hearing no additional questions, I will make a motion to approve the FY23 Student Tuition Recovery Funding invoicing recommendation from the board staff. Do I have a second?
I'm going to allow Mr. Ball or Mr. Wallace to probably have the second since they're the finance guys.
Yeah, Scott Wallace seconds that.
Appreciate that, Mr. Wallace. Any additional discussion? All right, hearing none, Mr. Lamont, would you please take roll?
Dr. Mittman. Dr. Mittman is absent. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 5 ayes, 1 absent, that motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Lamont, again, for the preparation of that material as well. And just so we're clear, Mr. Lamont did recommend that we actually have to call the public earlier. It was me that was the bad guy that said, no, we should wait. So if you're angry, you should direct those towards me and not Mr. LaMountain. And with that, we will have a call to public. Public input is encouraged. Presentation should be limited to 5 minutes. Please be aware, however, that the committee may not discuss, consider, or take action at the meeting on any item not scheduled on the agenda. During the meeting, additional public comment may be requested, but is generally not allowed. So with that, if you would like to make a comment, please just raise your hand and Mr. Lamont will call on you appropriately. So we'll pause.
Mr. Romano, I see none. Let's go once, going twice, going 3 times. I see no hands, Mr. Romano.
We officially wore the public out on this one. So it was definitely a robust meeting. I appreciate everybody's participation today. At this point, I don't believe we have a motion to adjourn the meeting. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Very good. And with that, we will adjourn the meeting at 2:06 p.m. Arizona time. Thank you very much, everyone. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, he's still there. Hi, Kevin. You gonna hold on?
I'll just make sure that everybody is off before we, and I've got to stop recording, so hold on.
Yeah.